Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm here, man. Are y'all ready for the fire talk? Low down on the biz and uplift the dialogue. Oh, yeah. Listen right along. This is straight off the press. The remix fresh with no prior song. Oh. Supplying y'all with the certified thoughtful. Yeah. To get the piece of the piece, it's time to call blow. Yeah. The rasp every wind is flavor, flavorful. Insatiable eardrums taste the radio. Here can't be beat. The flash of me that'll leave all your doors and all half the week. What? Positive and motivational strategy. Successful guests promote a self-mastery. BlogTalkRadio.com/the remix Fridays at 10 p.m. Eastern. Support the sister with a great reason. I must insist, don't miss it this evening. Peace, man.
And greetings, everyone, and thank you for joining us here live in the remix. It is Sunday night, and I want to say welcome, welcome, welcome to each and every one of you for joining me here live in the remix. I am your host, of course, Miss Blue, and tonight we have another exciting show planned for you. For those of you out there listening, and you might be listening for the very first time, I invite you to join us here in the remix. If you are listening via the phone, I see the phone lines filling up, as well as the chat room. You can certainly join us in the chat room as well. If you don't know how to get to the remix, let me go ahead and give you some remix instructions. Just simply go to www.blogtalkradio.com/the remix, and the chat room is open, and the remix family is there to greet you. If this is your first time joining us here live in the remix, you can definitely sign up if you're a guest, no matter where in the world you're listening from, and just go down to the bottom and just sign in. Tell us who you are and come on in, and you can continue to chat. You can always connect with us via the phone line. 646-652-2711 is the number to call for the remix. So tonight, I am excited that Brother Omar Johnson is going to be joining us in the forum tonight. If those of you missed the show that we did on Friday night, we had Dr. Yu of U360 Holistic Health joining us in the forum. Don't forget to go back and download an excellent share. Definitely those things, especially we talked about those things as far as men's health, as far as women's health as well. So it was a great share. So it is so good to see everyone in the house tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started. We'll do it remix style as everyone gets themselves situated. I don't know about you guys, but it's a good weekend. It's a good weekend. And it's good to see all of you out there as well. So good to see you guys in the house. Good to see you here. Big shout out to everyone on the phone and there, as well as listening from all over the world, Later on, sometime in the show, the Brother Mark from Japan, I will be giving out his contact number and information as well, too. So peace and love to each and every one of you. All right, so we're going to go ahead. We're going to move around just a little bit, just to kind of get ourselves into the share tonight. Brother Omar Johnson is going to be talking to us about that question and asking that question, why are Black people afraid to go back home? And we're going to be addressing some of those things. As you know, our Brother Omar Johnson deals with many different subjects, primarily definitely talking to us. He's a national certified school psychologist, and has done many lectures throughout the country and has been on the remix before. He is a relative of, one of our ancestors, Frederick Douglass, and he is definitely here to do his work and will continue to do his work. So it is an honor and a pleasure to have the brother come on and share with us each and every time. We learn so much, so much. And he'll be joining us here in just a second. So we're going to go ahead. We're going to listen to a little bit of Baby Blue, and then we're going to get ready to get ourselves into the share. So here we go. Here we go. Let's see. Where is it? Just a second. There it is, everyone. Here we go.
La 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 la, the remix. Hey, this is Baby Blue. And remember, if nothing else moves you, life will.
Ladies and gentlemen,
stop! It's the remix!
This is Blue Raspberry Wynn, and you are live in the remix.
Hey, yeah!
All right, you guys, here we go. I want everyone, if you can, to get up out of your seat and just take some time to move around a little bit as we get ready to, you know, just kind of get the energy moving within our body so we can get ready to receive the message, definitely, that Brother Johnson is coming on to share with us this evening. So we're going to listen to a little bit, one of my favorite songs, and certainly, hopefully, this is going to be your favorite song as well, too. And for those of you who have been listening, you guys know you know what this song is, so you'll get a chance to move as well, too. And here we go.
Oh.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us here. thank you so much for joining us here in the remix. It is so good to definitely have you guys in the house. As you know, there are so many different there's so many different guests that join us on the remix, and so much valuable information that does come through here that we all can use, no matter where it's coming from, and really things that we should all be focusing on and really be able to take the blessings from the message that is received from us. Brother Johnson will be joining us here in just a moment. And I don't want to put him on blast like that, but, you know, today is his Earth Day. And that just touched my heart when I really found out that he was really willing to still do the show, even though this is that very special day for him. We're going to do something special for him. And not just in just what we'll do here tonight on the show, but I'm sure that we'll also take the information that he's giving us and place it in our hearts and allow it to become that movement that we start to make in our own lives if we haven't already been taking those steps and continue on our paths and journeys and really carry those messages that are close not only to ourselves but also to others as we continue to learn and understand, or as I would like to say, as we continue to respectfully learn. So I wanted to share that as well. Good to see you guys in the house. I see the chat room filling up as well as the phone line, so that's excellent. It's always good to have you guys in the house. We're actually going to, I'm sure, I don't think Brother Umar is on the phone as of yet, but he will be here in just a moment, and I'm sure if he has some problems calling in, he will definitely let me know. But it's so good to have you guys all in the house as well. So big ups and big love to each and every one of you. Glad that your week has been well for you and today as well, too, on this special day, August 21st, 2011. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the phone lines. Because what we're going to be doing is we're actually going to have one of the Remix family members. They're going to kind of get themselves set up, and they're going to be singing Happy Birthday, Happy Earth Day, as we want to call it. So many different special names, but I think what is true is that we do wish that blessing of happiness on that day. So we're going to go to the caller calling in, it looks like, from area code 210. Peace and greetings to you, sis.
Love, love, love. Miss Blue and the Remix family, this is Kalimar.
Yes. Kalimar, so good to hear from you, and thank you. In case you guys didn't know, I asked, where are my singers at? And Kalimar stepped up and said that she would call in and be the first, because I would love for us to really give a big shout-out wish to Brother Umar Johnson. So, Kalimar, I thank you so much for that as well. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You were saying?
I was saying you're welcome. I don't mind doing it at all. Thank you for asking one of us.
Yes, yes. And so I'll also put this out there in case you guys are listening. I know we have some international listeners out there, as well as on the phone. If you sing, you know, a singer, and that's by your standards. Miss Blue, don't get to say if you're a singer or not. I think we're all singers. If you are a singer or you would like to sing Happy Birthday or Happy Earth Day to Brother Umar Johnson, definitely call in 646-652-2711 and press the number 1 when you get on the phone lines. And we'd love to have you join as well, too. No. All is well. all is well. So, Kalimar, I guess for right now, I think that I think it's you. So you'll get the honor to do that as well. Meanwhile, I want to bring you guys' attention to let me see what I wanted to say. I want to bring you guys' attention to make sure that you're downloading these shows. It's important that you download the shows because, again, this is sort of us building our archives. This is information that's put out that is free, that's put out. There is no cost to you, not as far as coming and receiving the information. So when you get the opportunity to really archive these shows for yourself, it's important to do that. So, you know, as I always say, download, download, download. You know, just make sure you download and do that. So, okay, Kalimar, you're going to be singing Happy Birthday or Happy Earth Day to the brother. I don't know. I don't think you need to warm up or anything. I think you're good, huh?
Yeah, I'm feeling okay. I'm all right. I haven't sung in a long time, but I'm doing fine.
Okay, I'm sure you will. So, we're going to get ready. I want to open up the discussion. We're going to be talking about this discussion, why are Black people afraid to go back home? And so, that's the question that I will ask to you guys and ask you. Are you afraid to go back home? We can open up the discussion, get your questions ready. You know, that amazing brother, that amazing warrior, Brother Omar, is going to be joining us here in just a few moments. In just a few moments. Yeah. Yeah, in just a few moments. Yes. Well, Kalimar, it's just me and you. What do you think about that? Do you think that we are afraid to go back home, you know?
Yeah, I think some people are because they're afraid of the unknown and they don't know what, you know, to expect. Because for so many years, you know, over generations, we have been taught to fear the unknown, which is already inside of us, which is around us. We were taught that. Not to look inside ourselves, to always look on the outside. So
right.
I think because people are, you know, they, I don't want to, like, put down anybody's religious belief or anything, but, like, even in the church, and I have spent a lot of my years in church, they would teach you never to go within yourself. This is dirty. This is nasty. You're not going to understand this. And so we were mind controlled to have that kind of fear. And it's not an overnight process to overcome, you know, that fear. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes, a lot of people are afraid to go home because they don't know what to expect. We taught, you know, there's a heaven, there's a hell. If you don't do good, you know, you're going to burn, you know, in the Gehenna fire. You know, and it's all metaphysics and occult, you know, in the Bible. And so when you don't have that understanding of the knowledge, then all you have is that fear. And when you start understanding that knowledge, your fear starts to lessen. That doesn't mean that you still don't have fears to deal with because it's in your emotional pain body, and it takes a long while for that to come out. And the more knowledge you get into, the more you start healing yourself from the within to the without. So I do believe.
Right. And then, you know, here's a question that was posed in the chat room that some people don't consider that home. So how do you connect, I guess they're saying, with something that you don't consider to be home? Is it just that you had to be birthed there? Because this is something that Brother Omar speaks about, and I'm sure when he comes back, once he gets here, he'll talk about that as well. You know, do you have to be birthed somewhere in order for you to find your connection? Do you truly believe that you had to be birthed somewhere in order to connect to a particular place? Is this place just a metaphorically place? Can you still reach that place while you're here or while you're there. At this particular point, brothers and sisters, we're all over the world. And when it becomes to thinking about us and thinking about African, it is a way of thinking, a way of living, a way of sharing, and a way of growing. If we're speaking on that level, then why is it difficult to come home? You know?
Well,
why is
it
difficult?
I agree with that because we were never taught that we were global. We always thought that we came straight out of Africa. The whole entire world belongs to us. And no matter where we're born, that energy is within us because it's right in our DNA. So it doesn't even matter
right.
what your location, you know, really is.
Right,
because
exactly.
Because the DNA is mm-hmm. lined up, you know, with the cosmos and, you know, the cosmic mother. I mean, energy transforms. It never stays the same. It always moves
right.
around and always builds you know, itself up and always transform. So it really doesn't matter if you was born in the States or in the Caribbean or whatever. We're all connected through that divine, you know, power, that spirit. So to me, it really has nothing to do with your location since we all in this together come from that same powerhouse, you know, that cosmic
mm-hmm.
balance energy.
Right. And I guess and then the other question is sometimes, you know, there's some discussion that's going on in the chat room is the perception that some blacks have about Africans, if we're talking about that as well. If we're looking at the whole African diaspora, then that's a little different. But what about those that we have come in contact with and have had some of those relationships that have gone awry and some of us have sort of kind of lost our way, I guess you could say that for lack of a better word, just because of that, you see? Just because of that. It's going to be an interesting discussion. I want to keep you guys very much engaged into it as we will open up the floor and we'll continue to talk about those things and questions and questions and questions. Well, Colleen Marr, we're going to be rolling up in just a moment.
Okay.
And you will get to do your thing.
Send me some energy. Send me lots of energy.
So, you guys, send Colleen Marr that energy. I believe the brother is on the phone with us. Let me take a look here. Yes, he is. Brother Umar is here. So, first, I'm going to allow him to come on and really just really sort of open up the floor with his amazing energy that he brings. And then we'll get right to it. So hold on just a second. And calling in, let's see. Let's go ahead. I believe that this is Brother Umar. Peace and greetings.
Peace, Queen. How you doing, Ms. Blue?
I am wonderful, even better now that you're joining us here in the forum. How are you? Ah, how
I'm doing
are
great.
You?
Doing great. My apologies for the late connection. I was actually wrapping up a lecture here in Philadelphia at Black and Nobel Bookstore on the very same topic of Pan-Africanism and repatriation. And
right.
you know, it's always an honor to be back with you again. I heard the sister's previous comment, and one of the things I wanted to say briefly, if I can, is this. When we're talking about Pan-Africanism and repatriation, we want to make sure people understand that for the purposes of this discussion primarily, although, of course, we
right.
accept any type of conversation of any aspect of Pan-Africanism. But we're not talking about spiritual Pan-Africanism. We're not talking about DNA Pan-Africanism. We're talking political. And what I mean by political is what is in the best interest of African people for our survival. We're not talking about gods. We're not talking about spirits. We're not talking about ancestors because none of that is going to change the condition that we're in. We have to change it. And I'm only saying that because a lot of times when we have political discussions, when we try to have political discussions, black people go off on tangents about spirituality. Spirituality ain't going to win physical war. Spirituality is not going to properly educate African children. Spirituality is not going to build our institutions. We have to do that. Spirituality is too esoteric of a topic for it to be included when we're talking about pragmatic pan-Africanism. We're talking about politically how to improve our situation. We don't want to talk about religion and spirituality because it becomes a method of escape, Ms. Blue. We use it as a method of escape to stop dealing with the problems in the here and now. Our children are being gunned down in the streets, okay? Our infants are being stillborn in record numbers. Black men are being mass incarcerated. Black women being pumped with HIV. No angels, no ancestors, no God, no spirit is going to change that. We have to change it. So I hope the audience is ready to have a real life, real world, reality-based conversation about what we're going to do to change our condition. Because if we keep on discussing this esoteric approach to solving our problems, we'll never get the hell solved. There's some brothers and sisters who are philosophical. There's other brothers and sisters who are theosophical. There's other brothers and sisters who are rhetorical. I am political, which means how do we improve the political and economic condition of my race? I am not interested in anything else but real world politics.
Very well said as well. Well, we have a surprise for you as we get ready to get into the share, and thank you for sort of preluding us in. And everyone is ready to receive the message that you have to bring. And we were just opening up the discussion, and I was asking people their thoughts as we were waiting on you as well. So thank you for that. And now, the sister that's on the line is actually going to be singing happy birthday to you, because today we know is your birthday as well.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for that gift.
You're welcome.
Hi.
All right.
Hi, brother. This is Colin. So in the chat room, and I do wish you a very beautiful Earth Day. So I got a lot of energy, and here we go. Happy Earth Day to you. Happy Earth Day to you. Happy Earth Day, Brother Umar. Happy Earth Day to you. And many more to come.
Oh, thank you so very much, sister. You have a lovely voice, very lovely voice, even over the phone.
Well, yes, thank you so very much.
All right. Well, beautiful. Thank you, Kalimar. Thank you, beautiful. All right. Well, we're ready to get into the share tonight. And thank you again for coming on as well. And I'm going to turn it right over to you. So let's talk about this when we talk about it from a political standpoint. Why are Black people so afraid to go back home? Why are we so afraid to go back home?
Well, there's fear that's based on ignorance and our lack of knowledge about Africa. The average Black person who will tell you that they don't want to go to Africa has never been there, has never studied the current conditions of Africa, and they get their education about their mother continent from the news media, which is slanted, negative, and deliberately put in a way to influence Black people not to deal with Africa, because the American social order and global white supremacy in general understand that the greatest threat to the perpetuation of their rule on this earth is for Black people in America to politically and economically link up with Africans on the continent. In fact, the big who created the Trilateral Commission for the Rockefellers in 1973, he was also an advisor to President Obama and instrumental in President Obama becoming president. He said on national television, the Big New Brzezinski, founder of the Trilateral Commission of the CFR, said on national television that the only threat to the current world order is for Africans in America to link up strategically and pan-Africanly with Africans on the continent. The fear is based on ignorance, is based on rumors, and it's based on self-hatred. The self-hatred, Ms. Blue, is even more critical than the misinformation, because the self-hatred leads to us not even wanting to collect information about the continent.
Right. So let me ask you this then, if that be the case. Some discussion, I'll tell you, that's coming from the chat room, and we kind of started this here, and just in some people that I've come across as well. Do you think the resistance is coming from those on the continent of Africa as well, towards us?
Not at all, because I've been to Africa 3 times. I know other brothers and sisters who have been dozens of times. I know brothers and sisters who have relocated to Africa permanently. I also know brothers and sisters, you know, who have relocated over there over a period of time. I know people who work there, who live there. I know one brother who went to Africa for a visit and never came back, okay?
Yes.
So I'm saying that up to say that our brothers and sisters in Africa, most of them want us. Of course, you got a couple who are going to turn their nose up to Africans who were enslaved, just like you have Africans over here who would turn their nose up to Africans on the continent simply because we were acculturated by the most powerful white man on the planet. So it works both ways. Ultimately, Miss Blue, it comes down to your political consciousness. If you are politically conscious and you run into an African who's politically conscious, you're going to be able to do work. At the same time, if you're politically unconscious and you run into an African who's politically unconscious, the relationship isn't going to work. But most of my friends in Africa, Miss Blue, who are some of my closest friends, I met them one time, and they're some of my best friends in the world right now. And when I visit Africa, they make it a point that I don't pay for travel, I don't pay for food, I don't pay for a place to stay. They call me, they text me, they email me. They are anxious to reestablish the Pan-African umbilical cord that stretches from the continent back over here to the West. And when I speak to the West, I'm not just speaking of Africans in America, although we are the most strategic element that has to get involved in this effort, but I'm also talking about Africans in Central, Southern America, as well as Brazil. We all have to contribute to the rebuilding of Africa. Marcus Garvey said that a strong man is strong everywhere, and he said that we cannot rise any higher than the condition of our race. And if we think that we're ever going to get properly treated in America, okay, by civil rights and voting and praying and marching, okay, it's not going to happen as long as Africa stays in her backward state. Have you ever seen a child get respect when they ignore their mother? So how in the hell do we expect to get it by ignoring our mother?
Right. Well, let's look at it like that, and an excellent point, because myself, very much close to brothers and sisters from the continent of Africa, and they have become life friends, and it happened instantly. One of my godsons, it happened instantly, literally, that connection. But I want to also say this, some of the issues that we're now dealing with, because the world has gone through so much, and some of these ideas, especially when it comes to these political ideas, what I have found, and these are some of the things that I've heard from some Africans, have now been dealing with that on the continent. So do you think that it will be difficult or more difficult to be able to really kind of go to the continent, because that is a whole continent that we're talking about, be able to replace ourselves back into the African continent and be able to make some movement, because now you have some of those same corruption things that have been going on here in the West, is now you're seeing these things come out so much in the continent of Africa.
Here's the thing, Ms. Blue. Black people, since the beginning of slavery and even before, have always repatriated back home. When you study our history through slavery, Reconstruction, the Garvey Movement, Black Power, Civil Rights, we have always went back home. Sierra Leone was settled by Africans from Europe and from America. Liberia was settled by Africans from Europe and from America. We have always went back home. One of the greatest pieces that has been hidden has been the consistent outflow of Africans, the consistent outflow of Africans from America, Central South America, and the Caribbean and England back home to Africa. We've always done it. It's never been difficult because we've always done it. And what bothers me, Ms. Blue, is the fact that so many Africans don't want to go home, but when I'm on the airplane flying to Africa, who's on that airplane? The airplane is 75% Korean or 75% Chinese or 75% East Indian or 75% Irish or Italian. For example, take Nigeria. The Chinese totally control the Nigerian chicken market right now. Africa is looking for investment, Ms. Blue. They're looking for people with money to come and invest to improve their condition. The problem is all these other races who are investing in Africa are investing so they can exploit. We need to invest so that we can improve. We have to organize our money and channel it into the stock markets and the resources of Africa. It makes no sense for a people to be willing to give up the richest piece of land on the face of the earth just so they can live with their eternal enemy. Our central problem is that black people hate who they are, African, and love who they can't be, white people. We suffer from the battered spouse syndrome. We have been beat down by white people so long that we don't think we can live without him.
Mm-hmm. So how do we begin to do this? And I want you to address that, and I know you will continue to address that. But here's the question I also, because, I mean, you've come on the scene and you're doing your work. We have a lot of scholars, brothers and sisters, who have really dedicated their life work to really, really finding out information, making this information available to us about Africa, about the continent of Africa. How come it hasn't come to the point where someone else has not really set up something a little bit more solid so that it can be that progression for us to get into that movement? Why do you think that? I know you said it's self-hatred, but I'm talking about those who are working in this particular area. I know there are more brothers and sisters out there than yourself doing this, but I mean collectively, why hasn't more movement already been done, do you think?
Okay. Number one, sometimes not you, but we as African people make the assumption. We make the assumption because someone calls themselves a Pan-Africanist or a cultural nationalist, or if they're an Egyptologist or if they're an African studies scholar or professor, we make the erroneous assumption that they really give a damn about Africa and African people. That's the first mistake. A lot of these scholars, Ms. Blue, don't give a damn about the condition of black people in America, and they don't give a damn about the condition of Africa. They simply are into Egyptology and African history so they can make a name for themselves and get rich. Most of our African scholars are millionaires, Ms. Blue. They're not interested in improving the conditions of the masses because they have been able to live a bourgeois black life that's akin to the middle class life that's lived by white people. So they really don't care. We lack sincerity within the conscious movement, Ms. Blue. We lack sincerity. And going back to the self-hate, the reason why it really hasn't been done in significant form since Malcolm X, so we're looking at almost 40 years, and then it was 25 years before Malcolm, when Marcus Garvey was the last person to really look at repatriation, is because we don't want to accept who we are. To deal with Africa means you have to accept that you're African. Black people don't want to have that conversation. Even when you talk to black nationalists, Ms. Blue, the average black nationalist is not interested in repatriation at all. The Nation of Islam doesn't deal with repatriation. The Moors don't deal with repatriation. The Hebrews don't deal with repatriation. Okay, when you look at it, the black church, the masjid, most of our political organizations, no one deals with repatriation. The only three organizations I know of, Ms. Blue, in the West that deal with repatriation, four. Number one is the Universal Negro Improvement Association, founded by Marcus Garvey. Number two is the Bobo Shanti Order of the Rastafari. Number three is my organization, the International Movement for the Independence and Protection of African People. And number four, which is the Ethiopian Movement, that was started and influenced by His Majesty Haile Selassie. Those are the only four organizations who are actually trying to improve the conditions of African people. Keep in mind, we're not moving back just because we come from there. We're moving back because if we stay here, it spells ruin, disaster, and extermination. You will die in America or live in Africa. Those are the only two options that we have.
Mm. And so for those movements and those people that have come and those that have went, how is it working out so far?
Excellent. Excellent. I know elders who are over there with schools right now, okay, and
right.
they're doing an excellent job. But for me, I'm trying to improve the condition for the whole race. I could go to
right.
Africa right now, live happily ever after. You know, I probably have my doctorate in a couple weeks. You know, I could live a privileged lifestyle, but it ain't about that. I'm not a bourgeois.
Right.
I don't want to go to Africa and just live as some elitist black from America. I want to improve the condition of my people, and I know that our ultimate redemption and independence lies on the continent, Miss Blue. And the problem is black people don't know about Africa. Africa has cities. They got subways.
Sure do.
There's cities in Africa. There's
sure
tons
is.
Of cities in Africa that look just like Philadelphia, just like
yes.
Atlanta. The only difference is the dialect of the people. But again, Ms. Blue, we're in love with white people. And we got to be clear, we are in love with white people. We do not want to ever wake up and never see a white person again. We're in love with Europeans. And because of that, we won't ever consider getting away from our former slave master. And he knows it. And he knows it. And as Marcus Garvey said, Ms. Blue, our condition will never improve until Africa improves. Am I saying that everybody needs to go back home? Of course not. I think there needs
right.
to be a screening process because a lot of black people in the West, again, we're talking about the Caribbean, South, Central
yes.
America, North America, and
mm-hmm.
Canada. A lot of us have been so psychologically polluted by the Europeans that we will be no good back home. So everybody's not going. Black men with white wives, they not going. Black women with blonde hair, wigs, and weaves, they not going. Black people who going over there so they can exploit Africa for their own personal agenda, they not going. People who have very strong derogatory attitudes towards us as a people, they not going. We got to screen people, Ms. Blue, because some people will cause more problems than they solve. We're not going to Africa to be an additional burden. We're going to Africa to uplift it off of its knees.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. So now, here's the other question I want to ask, because tons, if I look at it, look at our schools, look at our education systems, and I look at this, we have so many now, more than ever, Africans who are coming here to the West. Are they confused?
Africans who are coming to the West. First, let's be clear. There's not but so many Africans coming to the West when you look at the population of Africa. Of those
right.
who are here,
right.
most of them are here on temporary visas, Ms. Blue, in order to
yes.
get their education and go back home. Even the Africans who managed to get their American citizenship and stay, and keep in mind, Ms. Blue, is very difficult. It is extremely difficult to
yeah.
get a visa to visit America, more or less citizenship as an African. I got friends who've been trying to get here for 5 or 6 years, and they still haven't been cleared just to visit, let alone live. So it's not a large percentage of them, but the ones who do manage to get their citizenship, Ms. Blue, they come here so they can earn that money, send it back for the development of Africa, their family, and the community. And in fact, statistically, of all the immigrants in the United States, the African immigrant spends more money back home to his country than anybody from any other nation, including
yes.
the white
yes.
nation.
Yes, yes. That is so true. That is so true. So the screening process of who should really be over there to go, because now questions are flying to me over here in the chat room, and some people are saying, then how would you know if you want to go? Is it just based on the fact that in your heart you feel like this is a part of what you should be doing and your work? Should this be something that is innate within us, kind of like, you know, when we look at nature and we see certain fish and certain animals know how to come back home? Have we lost sort of that meter within ourselves?
Well, here's the thing, Ms. Blue. We have to give room for people's doubt. You know, I'm a psychologist. So the last
yes.
thing you want to do is put a person in an environment and in a context that they're not able to deal with. And as a result of that, if someone honestly says, I don't know and I just want to go and see so I can make a determination, I have no problem with that, Ms. Blue. That's honest, and it's understandable given the mental side of our race and the lack of education on the continent. I will not rebuke or criticize anybody. In fact, I will respect them for being man and woman enough to say, look, Brother Umar, I don't know, but I'm willing to try because I do know that that's my ancestral homeland. I'm forced to respect that. I'm forced to respect that. And if they decide they can't do it and that they got to come back, I wouldn't even fight against it. Why? Because if they're forced to stay, if they will, they might cause more problems than they saw. But the reason I got to respect them as Blue is because they're willing to give it a shot. In other words, they know that the African in America, at best, can only be a second-class citizen. At best. I mean, look at the Obama phenomenon, Ms. Blue. Obama is the highest that we've climbed, and it's the highest that you're ever going to climb. White people have made it crystal clear that we have given you a biracial president, and because we've given you a biracial president, we want you to understand that that is the last gift that y'all going to get from us. So there is no higher to climb over here. You will either accept your second-class citizenship, as Brother Malcolm called it, 21st century slavery, or you will go home and rebuild that great section of the world that God first put you in. That's your natural God-given house. That's where we come from. All these people talking about wherever we are, we're in Africa, and wherever we are, that's an escapism. That's escapism. Wherever the Italian is, Italy lives in that Italian. But that Italian also knows that his true home is Italy. Wherever the Chinese man is, China lives inside of him. But he also knows that he has a mother country, and that's where he wants to go to. All this nonsense about wherever I go, Africa is inside of me, that's a damn cop-out for black people who love white people too much to get the hell away from them.
Yes. Well, here's another question, and this is another question coming from the chat room. Then, if that be the case, if that be the case, and it is sort of this big disconnect because of these things of low self-esteem, then where do we begin to start there? Is it with information? Because I know that information doesn't necessarily cause transformation. So we have a lot of information available to us. It's out there. Just like yourself, you've been able to get that. Then why do you think that, or what do you think is going to be needed besides just having access to information to do it?
Okay. Number one, there's nothing to change somebody's beliefs than to see the brutal truth themselves. So taking Africans to Africa, not just to Egypt, not just to the slave ports, but to see the political and economic condition of the continent, that will be key to changing a lot of people's beliefs. Keep in mind, I went to Africa for the first time in 2005. Although I studied it, it's still not the same as you go. Think people who join the military. You can join the military. For example, I went to a residential military school. I read about it. I saw videos on it. I talked to people who went there, but I still wasn't introduced to it until I actually went myself. You know, so we have to baptize African people by fire, because when I got to Africa in 2005, it hit me like a ton of bricks of how livable it was over there. It hit me like a ton of bricks at the amount of economic opportunity that's over there. See, we got to ask ourselves the question, Ms. Blue, why is it that a black man or a black woman want to go through the headache of trying to open the business in America, and the average black business is going to fail 3 to 5 years after it started here because of economic discrimination and racism, okay? Why go through that over here when you can open up that same business in Kinshasa or in Lagos, okay, or Addis Ababa, okay, or Durban or Cape Town, Soweto, Johannesburg, open up that same business and be rich in about a year because everybody buying from you is African and they ain't got nobody else to buy from. When you look at the pure opportunity, Ms. Blue, it is absolutely asinine as to why we're not jumping at it. It's asinine. I mean, when you read every article on Africa, they're looking for investors. Do you know that there's Chinese people living over there happy and healthy and don't even want to go back to China except to visit? There's East Indians who've been in South Africa and been in Tanzania and Uganda and don't want to leave. I mean, when you look at people from other races, they have made a mecca out of Africa, and they don't even come from Africa. Yeah, they get bit by the mosquitoes. They get malaria. Right. They get yellow fever, and they get ill, and talking. Look at white people. They can't even stand the sun. But because Africa has so much opportunity and is so busy, you find white people in many of the metropolitan areas in the continent. I'm not trying to deride black people because I understand the mental state that we're in. You know, we have been cut off from our mother, and just like a child who has been sold away from their mom through adoption or stolen away from their mom, they're going to be a little ambivalent towards meeting their mom again and establishing that relationship. So I understand that this is a developmental process, but I have to caution everybody, Ms. Blue, that if we don't do it soon, if we don't do it soon, there's going to come a point in time where all will be lost. See, Ms. Blue, what I'm finding is that too many African people are not considering repatriation until something serious happens to somebody they love, Ms. Blue. I'm serious about this. When their brother gets shot, when their mother should have got a transplant and the hospital had the organ to give them the transplant, but because they didn't have a certain type of insurance, they allowed them to die. Or when the police pulled them over and beat them down to a pulp, and then finally they realized that white racism is a hell of a thing to deal with, and that 40 million Africans is no match for 350 million Europeans. It's a shame that we got to wait to get beat down by white people in order to wake up to the realities of Africa.
Yes, yes. Well, definitely lots of questions that are coming in and needed as well, and thank you for that as well. Here's another question, Brother Umar. What about those brothers and sisters who are coming from mixed backgrounds, mixed with the so-called white man or mixed with other races? What about them sort of kind of reintegrating themselves over there?
Excellent question. Excellent question. As a Garveyite, as a Pan-Africanist, okay, I want to be crystal clear that everybody hears me. I am totally against miscegenation. Totally. I do not believe that black men should marry and have children with white women, and I don't believe black women should marry and have children with white men. Because those children will be used against the race in power, against the race that has no power. When you study the history of African people, Ms. Blue, the armies that came to Egypt and the armies that came into Nubia and the armies that came into Ethiopia, those were not primarily European soldiers. Those were the hybrid group. Those were the mixed-race children of the conqueror and the black African woman, the Arab conqueror and the black African woman. They intentionally made it with our women, the same thing the Chinese are doing right now, which is why we got to get the hell back home and stop clinging to this European. Okay, what they do, Ms. Blue, is they mix us up psychologically by mixing up the race. When a child is born belonging to two races, that creates a natural conflict of interest, especially if they're born to the white race and the African race. I mean, look at that. No two races are more diametrically opposed than these two. So I feel for my biracial African brothers and sisters, but I do want them to know that although their white parent is not allowed to participate in the struggle, and although I am against biracial marriage and biracial conception, I do want to make it crystal clear, as did the Marcus Garvey before me, that the product, the child of a biracial union between an African and anybody else is still and always will be an African. So those biracial brothers and sisters who are asking what their status is, you are just as African as me. You are just as African as any unmixed African. We claim all our brothers and sisters. We claim all our brothers and sisters. They are not responsible for having a white parent or an Arab parent or a East Indian parent, and we don't hold that against them. If they identify as being African, and if they're loyal to the race, and if they're willing to work for African redevelopment, resurrection, and redemption, then they are right with me.
Right. And do you think, because coming from that position and understanding those things about psychology and sociology, that would later have an impact on the whole group? If they had a child and perhaps maybe that child did not cling to that.
Well, if a biracial African has a child and if they claim to be that African, then naturally they're going to raise their child not to neglect their European blood, because that's a part of who they are. They should study it, okay? but to identify primarily with who they are, and that's an African. Now, if a biracial African wants to perpetuate the crime of miscegenation and go out and cohabitate with a European, then we don't want them because they're not claiming their race. They still want to cling on to that European within them. So if they want to do that, then they're no different to the full-blooded black man who has a white wife. If they just want to perpetuate the crime, I don't want nothing to do with it. But if they are loyal to the race and they're going to marry a black man or a black woman, then they are my brothers and my sisters.
Yes, yes. Excellent. Brother Umar Johnson, live here in the remix. I see you guys out there. Lots of discussion and well-needed discussion as well. 646-652-2711 is the number to call. You can press 1 when you're on the phone lines. I guess here in a minute, we will definitely be able to take some calls. But I think this is a good time to let people know how to get in contact with you so they can find out about having you either come and speak or the work that you're doing, how to become a part of it, how to be able to get themselves in the position so that if they're ready to go back home, to make sure that they do have those things in place so they can begin to, and we all can begin to, explore this opportunity even more.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. My name is Umar Abdullah Johnson. I'm trained as a clinical psychologist. I'm trained as a school psychologist. I'm trained as a political scientist. And I'm trained as an educator. I'm a private practicing school psychologist. I do evaluations for children who are being referred for special education placement. I evaluate and diagnose mental retardation, learning disabilities, autism, emotional disturbances, deafness, blindness, traumatic brain injury, ADHD, conduct disorder, oppositional defiant disorder. I do mental gifted assessments. I do psychological counseling with children and their families. I am a parent advocate. I review special ed paperwork. I help parents navigate the educational legal system because education has its own law. If there's anybody out there who ever needs to reach me, if you need help with your child's situation, if they're trying to expel your son, put them on drugs, say he has a learning disability, diagnose him with ADHD or anything like that, please get in contact with me. If you're serious about visiting Africa to explore the possibility of relocating or building some type of industry, relocating or building some type of industry on the continent, I can be reached several ways. The first one is Facebook. Please request me on Facebook under my name, Umar Abdullah Johnson. I can be reached by email at umarabdullahjohnson@yahoo.com. I can be reached by telephone after the interview, of course. Please don't call during the interview. Area code 215-989-9858. Again, 215-989-9858. If you Google my name, you will get my contact information. If you wasn't able to hear this, I will be speaking in Richmond, Virginia, this coming Saturday at the Happily Natural Day, put on the fellow Pan-Africanist, put on by a fellow Pan-Africanist, Brother Moriyama of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, founded by Marcus Garvey. That's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but I'll be speaking Saturday at 6 on black male-female relationships, followed by the psychoacademic war against black boys. I'll be speaking the next day in Goldsboro, North Carolina, 1 to 5 p.m. in Goldsboro, North Carolina, at the Herman Peck Center from 1 to 5 on the psychoacademic and psychosexual war against black public and charter school children. I will be speaking in Queens, New York, at the African Poetry Theater, second weekend in November. There's going to be a Nat Turner celebration. I'll be on a panel discussion with Dr. Leonard Jeffries from City College, Dr. Kamal Cambone, fellow black psychologist from Carolina. That's the second weekend in November. I'll be in Baltimore the second week in October. I'll be in Indianapolis, Indiana, the first week in October. I will be in Florida, Jacksonville, Florida, the second week in November, Texas, the second week in November, Los Angeles, California, Saturday, December 3rd, at the Charles Drew University in Watts, California.
Excellent. Thank you for that as well. We're going to go ahead and open up the phone line 646-652-2711 for questions for Brother Omar Johnson as well, too. Now, when it comes to some people are asking what are some of the first steps that they need to begin to do, do you think one of the first steps, if they're thinking about doing this, is really, of course, getting into the information and studying it, but also really, I think at this point, everybody should have a passport.
Oh, you better have one.
Active. I make sure myself and my children, we have passports, and they're active. They're ready. So, passports. Yes.
And
so that was one of the questions.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Ms.
Go ahead. No.
You need to get your passport because there's legislation being considered that's going to freeze passport applications. You know, they want to shut down on the amount of people who are leaving this country, particularly black people. Okay, so you need to get your passport because there's some legislation and there's some talks in certain white circles that they want to stop black people from being able to travel to Africa altogether because they know that we are trying to fuel this pan-African movement and they are afraid that it may threaten their global stature, which in fact it will be. So please get your passport. It takes some time to get your passport.
Yes.
You don't get them as quickly as you used to as before, so you need to definitely move on getting your passport. Also, Ms. Blue, I would say investigate which coast in Africa you would like to relocate to or invest in. I want to be clear about something. My argument is that you must repatriate physically or you must repatriate institutionally. You may build a school. You may build a business that puts Africans to work, that teach people how to make a living for themselves. So even if you don't go physically, we simply have to be about empowering Africa so that we can be empowered. We cannot get more respect than our mother. So whatever we want, we got to first make sure mother has so the children benefit from her status. Very clear about that. Study the coast.
Yeah.
Do you want to be in South Africa? Do you want to be in West Africa? Do you want to be in East Africa, Northeast Africa? Do you want to be in a metropolitan city where the black people think pretty much like the way you think here? Do you want to be in a rural city? Do you want a place that has a nice mix between the big city and the rural life? Do you want to be in a Christian country? Do you want to be an Islamic country? Do you want to be in a region that has a traditional African religion? Africa is diverse. All the nations need us. They all need our help. But you can actually pick where you want to be. There's more than 54 nations on the continent. Some are right by the water. Some are in the middle of the continent. Some have vast grassland. Some have a lot of woods. Some have a lot of exotic animals. Others are known for their plant life. You know, so I first want them to invest. What part of the country? Okay, invest the economic situation. Maybe you want to go somewhere that's really impoverished because the program that you want to build will really be beneficial to people who have no knowledge of building economics. Okay, or you might want to go somewhere where they're already up and running. Or you might want to go somewhere where, you know, they have a mix of poverty and a mix of some economic success. So they have to investigate Africa, Ms. Blue, and decide where they're going to cast their buckets down.
Yes. Now, I want to make something really, really clear, because there's a lot of programs out here, and I want to get your take on this as well, Brother Omar. There are some programs out there, and I can't think of the name, and maybe that's a good thing. I think it's called KIVA, something like that, Kiva, where you can actually invest money into different businesses to get them started. Here's my concern with that. Who is setting that up? And how do you really know that that connection is going together? Now, some years ago, I spoke with a few brothers and sisters who were trying to get programs started, sort of like the Kiva program, but would be based upon those RAN and based upon those things of being backed by African brothers and sisters ourselves. So just because you look out there and you see these different programs out there and it says that you can support a village and send $5 a month, you're not talking about that, correct?
No, ma'am. I am not talking about that. The problem with those programs, Ms. Blue, two problems. Number one, you're using a go-between.
Yes.
You're using a go-between. We have to relate to our brothers and sisters ourselves. Once we've related to our brothers and sisters, if you want to use a go-between then, there's nothing wrong with that. Because you have direct contact. It is absolutely disrespectful, in my opinion, for a black person to use a white person to communicate with their own people and kin. You don't see Jews using black people to communicate with other Jews. You see? You don't see that. And so, you know, we have to be very careful about that. We got to relate to them ourselves. Furthermore, a lot of these programs, Ms. Blue, a lot of these programs are designed by white people to get rich off of Africa in the name of helping Africa. These Planet Africa and all these trade programs and all this other kind of nonsense, it's of no benefit to the continent, you know, whatsoever. We have to set up these programs ourselves.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because I know I feel privy to that. My heart has always been connected to Africa from a very young age. And like for 4 or 5 years, I did do one of those programs, shame to say, but I didn't know. And I was sending this money for this girl and her village, this young sister in her village. Now, what happened one time, and I guess it was a fluke, but this is how I found out what was going on. Somehow I got her real address. And because I've lived all over the world myself, I knew how to connect with her based on that information in the letter. So we started to communicate ourselves, and I started to send things directly to her, her mother, her father, and the people in the village. And the program contacted me and told me I cannot do that, that I'm not allowed to do that, that that is causing problems because I was doing that. And that's when the red flag went up that, so you was never giving them the money anyway. They wasn't getting the money. So I guess the point that I'm saying, because there was a show that I did a few years ago, and it was called The Promise and the Prince. And it was about the actor Will Smith and the promise that he made to this African boy, who was a boy at the time. Now he's a grown man. And I actually interviewed him where Will Smith and his wife has helped him go back to his country in Mozambique and set up different schools and organizations there in Africa. So I'm asking you, Brother Omar, do you have a program like that? So if there are brothers and sisters who want to do that and we don't have that connection to be made, how can that connection be made for those that are willing to invest in helping these particular programs and things like this get started?
Excellent, excellent, excellent. First, let me say this. Some of us are going to have to be those sacrificial lambs to go to Africa and stay there so that Africans in America have someone they know and can trust. And me personally, I think I will have to be one of the sacrificial lambs, brothers and sisters, who decide to quit America totally to go over there so I can be that liaison. You know, I'm volunteering for that. I think that I can do our people a lot better working from the east side of the Atlantic Ocean and not the west side of the Atlantic Ocean. And what my immediate plans are, and by the way, just yesterday, I was in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with the son of Marcus Garvey, Dr. Julius Garvey, and with the Bobo Shanti Rastafari, Brother Jabalani, and Priest Dougie, and Prophet Benton, and Priest Dada, and all the Rastas are Pan-African. They are strong about repatriation. And so Priest Dougie of the Bobo Shanti Rastafari and myself, we're planning a trip to Ghana before the year is out. We're going to go over there to meet with some heads of state and some dignitaries to see how we can begin to work on these different projects. That's one thing. Another thing is, as soon as my doctorate is done, and I know some people don't want to hear it. I know my mother not going to want to hear it. But as soon as my doctorate degree is complete, I will be shopping my resume to African universities. And if I get hired to go to Africa as a professor, I am gone so I can establish that Pan-African, reestablish that Pan-African umbilical cord. Third thing, also I want to take teams of people to meet with different ambassadors at the different African nation, what do they call the places in D.C. and in New York City, the embassy. The embassy.
The
want to take people to go and meet with dignitaries in the embassies. Let them know that we're serious. Let them know what we're trying to do. But right now, I'm scouting for talent, Ms. Blue. Right now, I'm scouting for talent. So if there's any brother or sister listening to the show who wants to give Africa a try, even if you don't stay, but you want to give it a try, or you at least want to go and see what you can do and you have a talent, you must have something to offer. care what it is. You might be a good cook. You might be a good cleaner. Okay, you might be good with raising children. You might be an educator, an engineer, a plumber, especially brothers and sisters who don't have a lot of education, who may have a prison record, but do have some skill that they can't use here because their prior offenses and lack of education is being used against them. The best people who should be considering repatriation right now, Ms. Blue, are those who the American social order are shutting out of an opportunity to improve their quality of life. I'm talking especially to them, because you do not have to have all the degrees and certification that you have here in America in order to put your talent to work. You might have a brother who knows how to cut hair. If he wants to go to Africa and open up some barbershop and teach brothers and sisters over there how to cut hair, that's somebody I can use. I don't care what the skill is. You might be a surgeon or you might be a cook. You might be a caterer or you might be an engineer. Whatever it is, if you're interested in meeting with me, because when we go to the embassies, I want us to be professional. I want us to have on our suit and ties because that's what they're going to respect. And we're going to say, these are the skills we have. What can your country offer us? They might say, we can offer y'all a place to stay. You won't have to pay rent. You'll get a stipend. Of course, they can't pay you American money, but you won't have to lose your own money and going over there to help out. So if there's anybody listening who's interested in that, I want you to send me an email with your resume, quick paragraph as to what your interest is, what you would like to do, and in the subject line of the email. Do not send this as a Facebook message. Send this as an email, okay? I only want one thing in the subject line, and that's going to say repatriation to Africa. Because what I need to do is group all those emails together. I will contact you, find out where you are, and I hope to have, at the start of the new year in Black History Month, a Pan-African Repatriation Conference where Africans from all over America come together, only those who want to go back or give back. If you ain't interested in going back or giving back, don't contact me. This is not for people who want to change people's minds. This is for people who have an interest. They might not be committed, but if they have an interest in this book, I want them to email me and let me know they're interested.
Yes. Okay. So you guys have that information. Definitely a lot of people seem very excited about that. And it is definitely an opportunity, and they are. And I'll reach out to you as well, too. We're going to go to the phone lines, if that's okay with you right now, Brother Umar, and take some callers that are have been waiting here for some questions.
Sure.
Okay. So here we go, 646-652-2711 is the number to call if you have a question as well. And some of you who are asking certain questions about what you need to do to get yourself ready to go, how much money you need to have, these are some of the questions you can actually call in and ask as well. We're going to go to the first caller calling in from area code 972. You are live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 972? Okay. 972, we're getting a lot of static in your line, so I will ask that you call back in and let's see if we can get a better connection. Calling in from area code 571, you're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Erica. I'm calling from Brooklyn, and I wanted to know, like, as far as moving to Africa, how is that going to heal our psychological issues? I mean, I believe that it's a good economic opportunity, but when we move over there, is it really going to heal us as a people?
Okay. The psychological that needs to take place is an ongoing process. And with therapy, as a therapist, you never know how long somebody is going to need that therapy. You can't tell ahead of time. Some people may need it for the rest of their life. Some people may only need it for a year or a couple days. However, the problems that we face, my sister, are multifactorial, and they are multi-complex, and they are multifaceted, which means that we cannot focus on one thing until it's fixed before we do anything else. Because if we wait until we fix the mental health of Black people in America before we repatriate, we would have all been exterminated by then because it's going to be a hell of a job. I'm not saying repatriation to Africa is going to do anything about the psychological state, because that's something that's ongoing. And the brothers in Africa need just as much healing as we need over here. Remember, we have been physically free for 143 years. The average African has only been physically free for 50 years. Ghana got their independence in 1957.
Yes.
The Congo got their independence in 1960. Okay, we got African, South Africa didn't get their independence until the early 90s. So, believe it or not, their post-traumatic slavery disorder, or should we call it post-traumatic colonialization disorder, may be worse than ours. So the therapy is going to be ongoing, but I will tell you this. For those who are spiritual, this is where you come in, because the healing that we're going to be able to benefit from by taking what we learned in the West in terms of therapeutic psychology and merging that with the spiritual systems of the Dogon and the spiritual systems of the Dogara and the spiritual systems of the Yoruba and the spiritual systems of Kemet and of Nubia and of Ethiopia, you take what I know and you marry that to the million-year-old spiritual tradition of Africa, I think we will be able to speed up the healing process for all of our people.
And also I wanted to know, can we escape white people because they own and control Africa also, and they also put limits on what you can own there. So can we really escape them by going to Africa? I mean, isn't Africa their home also?
Remember, we're not leaving America to escape white people. We're not leaving America to escape white people. When you get to Africa, there will be white people there. They will not be in the numbers you have here. Some countries, you can go your whole life almost and not see a white person. But in other countries, they dominate like in South Africa. But the question is, sister, why do they dominate? And they dominate because they are controlling the economics, because Africa is in need of technical know-how. The white people in Africa are largely there to exploit Africa. There is no white person in Africa who moved there just because they like the climate, or moved there just because they like the animals, or moved there just because they like the water or like the people. They are there to benefit economically. In other words, they are taking the place of Western blacks who don't want to go home and assume their rightful place. So as we move in, they will be forced to move out, because the African nations will be able to say that we have our own brothers and sisters to help us, and we no longer need your help, and we no longer need any more loans from you that are crippling our economy. The loans from Washington, D.C., for all of my Obama lovers, Obama's International Monetary Fund and World Bank is crippling Africa, and it cripples Africa in the form of structural adjustment programs. And what I mean by that is whenever an African nation needs money from America or money from Britain, they give them that money, they charge them an exorbitant interest rate on that money, and they also force them to change the way they run their economic system. In other words, they sabotage the economies of African nations in the name of financial aid. But when we go home, when we get back there, they no longer have to rely on white people because they got their own people to do it. So, yes, there's going to be white people there. We're not trying to escape white people. We're trying to escape our misery. And the only way we're going to escape our misery is by investing our money into the resources of Africa so that we can make Africa into the world's next superpower, which is what it used to be and always should have been.
Yes. All right. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, sister, for calling in with your question as well. Okay. I think she's listening. Okay. So wonderful. Here's a question. I know you guys are holding on waiting, but I have a question for you. In some of the different parts, and this is for myself and other sisters, I know since long being able to visit the continent there and talking to others who've come, I know that the the situation when it comes to women has been very harshly portrayed. What is sort of your take on that about sisters who are concerned about going over there as a sister and really seeing these cases of rape and genocide and all of these different things that we see that are happening with women?
Excellent question. In order to understand how women are being treated in Africa, you have to understand colonialism and you have to understand the psychology of domination. All oppressed people take on the punishments of the oppressor and use them against each other. When you look at black people in America, we primarily shoot and beat each other up because that's how we were treated during slavery. When you look at colonialism in Africa, they primarily stab and machete each other because that's what was done to them under European rule. What's happening to black women in Africa, okay, is not African culture. It is European culture. It is sick European culture that has been imposed upon Africans who have lost their way and who have only been free from European rule for 50 years. But let me tell you how we can change that. Black women from America who tend to have a very strong sense of what women's rights are will be able to go there. And with the support of black women there, black men there, African governments, and black men here, we will be able to eradicate the sadistic practices that are currently being done in Africa that are mistreating our sisters over there, such as cutting off the clitorises of women to make sure they don't have sex before they get married, sewing up the vagina so they don't have sex before they get married. Do you know where that comes from? That comes from the Arab slave master. I said that comes from the Arab slave master. That's exactly what he did to enslaved African women up and down the Nile River Basin when he would go into Africa, and he's still going into Africa, stealing our sisters and cutting off their clitorises and tying up their vaginas to make sure they stay virgin. That is something that we got from our Arab slave master. So as you can see, Africans psychologically are just as messed up as we are. So how is this going to work? It's going to work because as messed up as they are, they have common sense enough to know that we are the answer.
There you have
it. When you go to Africa, Ms. Blue, they automatically look to us for leadership, Ms. Blue. I'm in Africa, when I give a lecture in Africa, I gave a lecture on the corner in Alexandria, South Africa, right outside of Johannesburg. I was talking to five brothers, Ms. Blue, five brothers, about Pan-Africanism.
Right.
In 10 minutes, I didn't even realize it. In 10 minutes, I looked around, and in 10 minutes, there was about 1,000 Africans standing around me. I could not believe it. You know why? I am an American-born black man. And Africans treasure and respect American-born black men. They do it for the wrong reason, though. They do it because we happen to be trained by the most powerful white man on earth. And so because we've been trained by the most powerful white man on earth, they assume that that power extends to us as well. But we have to use that to our benefit, whatever it takes. But they also look to us for a good reason, and that is because Pan-Africanism came from America and went to Africa. Pan-Africanism came from the Caribbean and went to Africa. So because we brought freedom to Africa in the form of Garveyism, they are looking to us to bring freedom again to Africa in the 21st century. The black man and woman has to understand that we are the global leaders of the race on this planet. All Africans look to us for leadership, but we are doing such a poor job of it, and it's time to reverse that set of circumstances.
Excellent. Thank you for that. We're going to continue. We're here live in the Remix speaking with Brother Umar Johnson. As we continue, we're going to go to the caller calling in, it looks like, from area code 708. You're live in the Remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Peace, Ms. Blue. This is Terrence from Chicago. I had
Greetings.
A question. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I had a question regarding how, for Brother Umar, how blacks in America who try to be more proactive with being proud of their race and having more dignity in it, how do they reach, like, the younger generation? Because I'm only 23. And I noticed that, like, a lot of kids coming up, they have, like, influences coming from the media, and it's the same, like, degradation that we go through. Like, you know, you look at videos and whatnot, so kids are getting a lot of influence from that. So how do you reach kids who are coming into themselves at such a early age and try to you know, maybe not try to be a force, but try to be an example in a way so they can see that, you know, they can have pride in their, you know, their heritage without feeling like they have to succumb to society in a way, you know, they portray us as just being, like, you know, uneducated and all these different stereotypes.
Well, to reach children, you have to meet them where they are. You have to meet them where they are, talk their language, and bring them slowly to where you want them to be. You can't bring them quickly because you'll lose them. You have to slowly uncondition their thinking. The same way the American social order conditions the way we think through the media, we have to uncondition the way our young people think by simply having them with us. You can uncondition the thinking of your niece or your nephew or the little guy who lives down the street from you simply by exposing him to your consciousness, exposing him to your thoughts. Our problem is we don't spend enough time with our young people. We simply want to change the way they think in a weekend, or we want to change the way they think in a summer camp, or we want to change the way they think in one school year. It has to be consistent, and it has to be compassionate, and it has to be ongoing. You can do it. Okay, I'm an orator, so I was blessed with a gift of speech. Well, sometimes I can change the way children think just by having them for 2 hours. Okay, but then again, there's other children where it takes the slow meltdown, the slow meltdown. Remember something, and this is something African people have to realize. Okay, we do have righteousness on our side. The universe is run on law, and the universe is run on order, and it is run on truth, yeah, balance, and reciprocity. So as long as you are teaching truth, justice, and reciprocity, and you are consistent, and you are committed, sooner or later, we will get the young children back. The reason we don't have the ear of our youth is because we don't spend no time with them.
True, true.
Thank you so much. I mean, the reason I asked that was because, you know, I do have, like, younger nieces and nephews, and I really don't get a chance to spend a lot of time with them. But I also see, you know, kids around the neighborhood or wherever I'm at, and I also want to, like, you know, because I'm not a community leader or anything, I write, but I want to also, you know, be, like, a good example. So when I'm in front of kids, like, if I'm not dressed a certain way or I don't talk a certain way is what they're used to seeing, that they, you know, they get other options. But I feel like sometimes, you know, it's hard because we have such a mentality of mistrust for each other that we look at somebody who actually, you know, could be like our brother, or, you know, we could have kinship with, as like an enemy, because they don't look like we do or dress like we do. And it's this whole, you know, way of thinking, and I feel like in America that kind of keeps us separated, where, you know, we can't embrace each other for being different. We have to take on this, you know, this community way of thinking, like, you know, a black man is supposed to be this way or a black man is supposed to be that way. And, you know, we're not really open anymore to, like, you know, diversity, because we feel like the man next to us is judging us, you know, and I'm trying to, like, you know, break past that just in my own life. And when I deal with, you know, different blacks of all, you know, age groups, you know, I just want to be able to, you know, embrace them without feeling like I'm, you know, I'm judging them or I'm trying to exploit, you know, where they coming from, and, you know, try to find, like, some common ground, because I feel like unless you find common ground just with the people in your own community, then how could you go to another country and try to, you know, embrace, you know, all your brothers from Africa and your sisters from Africa if you can't even do that in the country you at right now with the limited resources that you have? So that's sort of where I was going with that question.
Totally understand what you're good, brother. Totally understand.
Yeah.
If you want, get in contact with me after the show, and we could build a little bit more, and we could talk about what you're doing. I might be able to help you out.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling in. Peace. All right, we're going to go to the next caller. It looks like calling in, it looks like a Skype call, calling in from Wild Goose 88.
Yeah, it's Mom Moose.
Sorry. Let's go to the next caller. Wild Goose, it looks like somehow you might have got disconnected there. Maybe call back. You can also hit me up in the chat room as well, too. But let's go to the next caller. Calling in from area code 773, you are live in the remix. please tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 773? Okay, their call dropped. 773. We can continue this discussion as we wait for the callers calling in. You guys, 646-652-2711 is the number to call. If you have a question for Brother Umar as well, make sure that you call in and press 1, and we can continue the discussion here as we continue. So we're going to go to the next caller calling in from area code 334. You are live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Yes, my name is Gene. I'm calling from Alabama. Okay, my question is, how y'all doing?
Greetings, hello.
My question is, brother, how much money do you think that we would have to save up before we go? Because my thing is, that's my greatest fear. I know I'm going to go back to Africa and live, because I feel as if I die in America, I don't care if I'm rich, I don't care if I have 10 businesses, if I die in America, I feel as if I have failed. But my thing is, my biggest fear is I'm scared to move anywhere where I know I don't have something guaranteed, like if I will have a house, if I'll be able to find a job. So could you shed some light on that?
Okay. Excellent question with a couple thoughts. First of all, we have to remember something. When we're talking about independence, there is no security. We got to be very clear about this, because this is something that separates us from everybody else. When Chinese people come from China over here, they're not guaranteed to make it, okay? When Italians come here, you know, when Jews come here, when Arabs come here, they're not guaranteed to make it. They're simply committed to making it, and they make it happen. Okay, no courageous people can ever make anything out of themselves. No people can make anything out of themselves without courage. So when we say we need security, you ain't got none. But I can guarantee you this, though. I can tell you this. Remember now, the African currency is a lot lower than the American currency. Let me give you an example. In Ethiopia, one U.S. dollar is like 40 Ethiopian dollars. In Senegal, one U.S. dollar is like 80 Senegalese dollars. My point is this. You do need to save up, but you won't have to save as much as you think, because your money goes so much further. Earlier, Ms. Blue asked me, what should people do in preparing to make that transition? And what you need to do is, when you study nations and you study what coast you want to be in, what country, what type of religious system, you also want to study the currency, and you want to study the exchange rate, because that will let you know how much you'll need to save. You see, but I can tell you, your money in Africa goes far. It goes extremely far because of the low exchange rate. Again, we have to take all of these curses and change them into blessings. The fact they look up to us because we're here, the fact that the American dollar goes so much further, that means we can get so much more done. But see, what I want you to do, good brother, when you go over there, is have a small business idea. Something simple over here, such as making T-shirts, will damn near make you richer there. I'm serious. Importing used cars, importing used cell phones. There are people who are millionaires in Africa off of selling used cars. They can't afford new cars. So we do import, we do export. So you have to think of your niche. You might have several niches. As my Nigerian brother told me when I was in Nigeria a couple years ago, he said, Brother Umar, you could become a millionaire in this country selling toothpicks. Selling toothpicks. Don't think big, my brother. Think small. Think of something you can do. You can do it well, and you'll get rich over there doing it. For example, okay, I know Africa needs psychology, not white psychology, but they need therapeutic programs, because there's a lot of same problems we got, they got. So I'm thinking about going over there and setting up the mental health system. But also, I was trained how to cut hair in high school. So I'm also thinking about opening up some barbershops and teaching some of the native African children how to cut hair so they can make some money for themselves, and then open up some beauty schools over there. Here's the thing, my brother. Any government in Africa will give you full rein. Will give you full rein because you're from America. So they assume you know what you're doing. And they assume that it's going to turn out right. So we have to use it to our advantage. We need to be patient. It needs to be well thought out, because we don't want to lose the confidence that they have in us. Because you only get one time to make a good first impression. But I'm telling you that the security that
speak, you really don't have to worry about it because no matter where you fall, coming from the West, you will land on your feet.
Okay, because I had been doing a little research and everything, and when you were saying about the dollar goes so much further, I was watching on this documentary, and also for the people in the chat room, if you haven't seen it, watch, gosh, I can't even think of it. I'll think of it after a while. But, oh, Without Borders, it's about Americans that went to Africa, and they're doing real good over there. And also, because I was looking at what I'm good at, and I've taught a few brothers at my job is welding. That's what I do. And I'm going back to school for it to just get me some more blueprint reading. And I said, well, I know I can do this right here good, and that's what I was thinking about doing. But it was a brother that went over there and just speaking on the money part of it, and he bought a spot and renovated an apartment complex for $14,000. And I was like, man, you know, $14,000, and he got a whole building and renovated it. So, you know, I was looking at that also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, brother. What we're going to try to do, as I was saying earlier, when I start meeting with the embassies, you know, ultimately we want to get their support to have us start a couple of Pan-African repatriation camps. We need some repatriation camps where we go over there, okay? I don't want people going over there once and just staying. You know, we need to go. We need to see what we need, come back, you know, get everything shipped over there. You know, we want this thing to be orderly and professional, but we need some camps so that we can be, what, acculturated into the society. Where are the hospitals? What do you do when there's an emergency? Who do you call? Okay? What type of social conflicts are going on? Just like you have to be acculturated when you move to another state in America, we have to be acculturated when we move to Africa. And the African states will help us to do that. They're going to acculturate us. So, you know, this is going to be a process, and I think it's going to start with the Pan-African repatriation camps. But one man can't do it. Two men can't do it. We need a force of Africans. It doesn't have to be many. I'm satisfied with about 50 Africans. If I got 50, then I know about 20 of them going to drop out somewhere along the way. You know, if I'm starting with 50, you know, then I'm convinced we can get something done. You know, I'm totally convinced that we can get something done. You know, we can study the country, strategically decide which country we want to work with. Some governments are going to be more willing to work with us than other governments. We got to study that thing. But before we even start that, we have to get a group of people who committed to this thing, committed to repatriating physically or repatriating economically.
Okay. Thanks, brother.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Peace. We're going to continue on. 646-652-2711 is the number to call, or you can actually Skype in as well. We're going to go to the next caller calling in from area code 520. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Greetings, beloved one. I am Goddess Isis on your chat. And beloved Honorable Umar, I'm your Empress Mom. And I salute and I bow to all that you are sharing that's going to bring about her people divine solutions. And what I'm going to say is I'm going to make a statement, and I'm asking Brother Umar to comment on my statement. I am an advocate for our people, and he knows that. And I focus on the black African woman, the one that was first used to destroy the whole entire black African family. She was the first divine teacher on this earth that was used to destroy our family. And knowing that, and a lot of them don't know that, so I work with the black African woman to show her who she was before the enslavement. And she is the one that must head up the restitution, reparation, repatriation on the feminine side, okay? Because she must come now together collectively so that we can restore and reclaim everything from the feminine side. She must head up an advocacy 24/7, chanting restitution, reparation, repatriation until our divine solution comes. She must come together. In Africa, I think Brother Umar will agree, many of them there in Africa, they emulate us here in America. So So if we got our divine right act here in America, they will start emulating what we do here, providing it's divinely right. And the other thing is, Brother Umar, the vision that was given to me is that we must, globally, wherever we are, 24/7, I mean, take shifts if necessary, it's called by any means necessary, wherever we are, 24/7, advocate for our ancestors and slave reparations now. And once we do that, I'm telling you, we will see a coming together. For example, I have encouraged the people in Haiti. I've contacted, what's his name, that rap singer. I forget his name. He ran for president.
Wycliffe.
I've contacted him on several occasions, you know, via email, and another sister, Izili Danto. And I encouraged her there, and I encouraged them both. I said, we are the outside looking in. And I know that our people there are hungry and thirsty for solutions. And I said, I encouraged them to do the same thing, 24/7 there, to do the same thing I'm just sharing with you about the advocacy of our ancestors in slave reparation, enslaved ancestor reparation. Because what else they got to do? What they got to lose? They talk all the time. I've been to Haiti for 3 weeks. You know, there's a lot of talk, a lot of talk, a lot of talk. It does not cost much to say those three most powerful words. Reparation now is the ultimate, divine ultimate weapon and tool against the evil oppressor, because the evil oppressor have studied us for years and say, oh, they're not going to rise up and demand and command and advocate for anything. Their plates are very full right now, and as an ex-military person, I know strategy and plans, okay? I've studied the European by being in that environment. And while their plates are full, and their plates are full because of all the wars that they're creating, all the other problems that we are seeing here, that is the best time to pile something else on their plate for them to eat. And it is the most powerful, ultimate weapon to shoot. When I say shoot, meaning only in the words in our advocacy, at them, because they're not expecting it. So this is what I'm sharing. I don't think I have a question except for Honorable Umar, what are your thoughts on what I just said?
Oh, I totally agree with you, good sister. Totally agree. And I would add to that, that we have to understand that the repatriation should and must proceed the reparation. What happens is generally reparations are given to nations as a result of harm done by another nation. And as long as Africans in America identify as Americans, it's going to be difficult to get reparations from the same government that you claim loyalty to. When the Jews received reparations, it was because of harm done by the Germans, but the Jews were still a separate nation living in Germany. We don't identify as a separate nation. We identify as Americans. In other words, there's no difference between us and the Italian American, the Irish American, the Japanese American. So when we pull out of America and go to Africa, once we begin to work and build and Africa sees that we are improving her condition and that we are loyal and sincere and not there just to exploit, then the African nation will get behind our plea for reparations. And once the African nation get behind the Americanized Africans fight for reparations, they will get paid. We're not going to get paid now because we're not working from a position of power. You have Americans who are black asking for reparations from their own government. It doesn't work that way. We have to first quit America, go home, begin to build, and then have Africa and the African Union and the individual nation states then say, we are owed reparations.
So now it's not just the Americanized African demanding reparation. It's the nation and the race itself. In other words, Nigeria can now say, you stole X amount of Africans from me. And we're the living proof that they stole them. Ghana could say, you stole X amount of Africans from me. Now they're back home. You owe us money for the forced labor. And so you not only owe it to them, you owe it to their race and their whole continent. If we do it that way, then there'll be a lot more push behind the struggle for reparations, and we'll get what we're entitled for. The way we're doing now, we're only going to end up with a couple of dollars because they're going to give that money to a bunch of bourgeois Negroes who are going to pocket it, most of it anyway. I'm all for reparations, but I want the repatriation to precede the reparations.
Thank you, beloved. Thank you. And I'll add this one more thing, and I'm speaking to the black African woman. May you be young, old, or whatever. Okay? You don't know the power you have within you. I'm here to help teach you, black African woman, how to teach the black African man how to get along with us, the black African woman. Once we return to our once divine original mind, the evil oppressor will have hell to deal with. Because that saying, a woman scorned, what is that saying? Hell has not known hell until
hell
a woman is scorned,
no
something
like
that.
Hell has no fury like a woman scorned.
That's the one I'm looking for. And we are the ones that's got to do this, because we have so many brothers out there scattered in many different areas. We have homosexual brothers, brothers in jail, and brothers just doing some of everything, okay? We got to work with the brothers who are straight. And that's why I advise you all also to listen to Honorable Umar's video in reference to divine polygamy.
Yes.
Okay, thank
you
so much.
Yeah, what was your name again? Was it Goddess Isis?
Goddess Isis. I'm on your chat.
Isis. Okay. Thank you so much for that, sister.
Talk to you later, brother Umar.
All right, Queen Mother. I'll be in touch soon.
Wow. I guess she didn't hear me tell her bye. Okay, we're going to go to the next caller calling in from area code 571. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hi, I'm on the line again. I just spoke earlier. I wanted to know, like, as far as moving back to Africa, it's not so much self-hatred, but we have the way we run our society, our systems are European. So if we're going to go to Africa, we should be starting to do, like, an advanced society, like trying to continue where we left off in Africa or the ancient Africans in creating a more advanced society that's not, I guess, necessarily modeled in the same way. Because sometimes if you're oppressed for years, you copy your oppressor's ways and the way he does things. And if we were to go to Africa, we would have to first, and we can do that here, you know, find out how to be advanced people and be advanced society, like not a society that's so consumed with work, maybe working 8 hours. You know, a society where things are free, you know, where people are not so in survival mode where they can become advanced.
Excellent question. Excellent question.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with you. Firstly, let us understand that the way Africa was when we left Africa is not the way it is now. So we're not trying to replicate 16th century Africa. What we want to carry with us are the principles upon which our culture is based. One of the biggest problems we have in this country is that we confuse the principles, okay, with the actual manifestation of the culture. For example, to be African doesn't mean you have to wear dashiki. To be African doesn't mean you got to have on sandals. To be African doesn't mean you got to have with 20 syllables in it. It's the principles of Africanity, like unity, respect for elders. We carry those principles with us no matter where we go. And I think sometimes many of us are trying to transport 16th century Africa to the 21st century world. It's not going to work. Study the principles. What were the principles that were beneath ancient Kemet? What were the principles that were beneath the ancient civilizations in the Congo? We want the principles so that we never stray from our principles, because they've been laid down after thousands of years of being tested. Now, here's the thing. The knowledge of how things should be done is still in Africa. The elders have it. The reason why they don't practice it is because they have been forced to conform in order to get what they needed to survive from white people. So they had to change their entire political, economic, and social structure so they could survive. And so they basically became European in order to survive. But if they see that they don't have to be European in order to survive, because we're going to be there to help them out, then they'll go back to the traditional African ways of life. It became a necessity. They gave it up out of a necessity. But once we begin to help out, they'll be able to go back to the way things used to be in terms of our principles, and they'll be able to help us learn that. The education won't be one way. We're going to teach them how to come up to the 21st century technologically, militaristically, politically, if they're going to teach us how to be African again.
I'm not talking about moving into the 21st century. I'm talking about becoming an advanced society and not necessarily going back to the way things were, African principles, but just an advanced society, a society that is different, that's not based so much on economics, I guess.
No. Africans have the oldest economic systems. They're just not capitalist. See, again, we don't need to really try to change who we are as a people. We simply have to update the methods. So the Africa of the future won't look like a white economic order, and it won't look like a 16th century African order. It's going to be a 21st century African order that we cannot predict right now, because that type of thing has to be developed as a result of conference, collaboration, dialogue. We have to create those things. One thing we don't want to do is go to Africa acting like we know it all. We don't want to do that. We want to blend what they have with what we know. Blend what they have, because they have the culture. They have the history. They know the principles. We're simply going to learn those principles and, based upon it, construct the economic order to be, which we can't say what it's going to be, because we have to develop that. Okay, but it will be a 21st century African economic order that does not stray from what we stand for as a people, but at the same time keeps us globally competitive. See, keep in mind, we don't have to be as competitive as the Europeans, because Africa doesn't need Europe. Africa doesn't need America. Africa doesn't need France. The only reason why it looks like they need white people is because black people from the West are not helping out their kids. The white people are a substitute for you and I. Once we come back, they don't need them no more. And the fierce competition that you have in America, you don't have it in Africa, because there's enough land for everybody. There's enough food for everybody. Okay? There's enough wives for everybody, husbands for everybody. You see, when we get back there, we don't have to compete, because everything is there. We simply have to develop what God gave us. Develop what God gave us. The reason why all the gas companies and the oil companies are in Africa is because Africans don't have the technological sophistication to refine their own natural resources. They don't know how to refine them. And some nations know how, but they don't have the money. They either lack the know-how or they lack the financing. We can provide them with the know-how and with the financing.
Okay.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. He's gone there. We're going to continue on. We still have an hour and 2 minutes to go in a very, very needed conversation as we continue to discuss this with Mar Johnson. We're going to go to the next caller calling in from area code 213. You are live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Yeah, my name is Octavius. I'm calling from Los Angeles, California.
Greetings.
Yeah, I was listening to your show. Y'all got a pretty heated debate going on right now, and I agree a lot with what the guy's saying. I don't listen to this show much. I don't know if you're a regular, but I agree with everything that guy's saying. Look, I'm going to tell you what.
Mm-hmm.
Are y'all still listening?
Yes, we're listening to you, brother.
I thought I got cut off. But basically, I mean, what it all boils down to is, you know, the ghetto capitalist revolution is starting worldwide, and this has already begun to happen. See, we got these riots going on right now in London. You know, these people out there, they fighting for their food, and we already got flash mobs in Philly beating people up, baby. And this is what's going to happen. See, we got the ghetto capitalist revolution going down. You know, we about to rise up. We about to rise up as a black community, and we about to put it to the white man. And that's all there is to it. That's what's going on right now. You know what I'm saying, the remix?
Yes. Well, definitely. Thank you for calling in. Is that coming from your phone, brother?
It's what coming from my side?
Oh, I thought you could hear. That's okay. Brother Johnson, are you still with us?
Yeah. I totally agree.
Hold on a second. I'm trying to see. We hear the little baby crying. Brother Johnson, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I had to mute the brother's phone. He had the baby in the background there. I don't know if you were able to get the question or get his comment to be able to address that as well.
Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to say that you can't win a war against an enemy when you live within his territory. And so for the brothers, and I agree with the spirit of the brother, and I'm not sure he was trying to say this, but there's a lot of brothers out there who think they're going to beat the white man up in America and take over America. Some of my Moorish brothers, you know, and I love my Moorish brothers, but, you know, they think that they can simply master the law and take the white man to court and get the white man to give us back America since we were the first people here. I find such notions ridiculous because the world is not run by law, it's run by power. And only power is going to get you what you need. And, again, it goes back to the dichotomy between pan-African nationalism and black nationalism. The black nationalist wants nothing to do with Africa, Ms. Blue. The black nationalist wants to fight the white man and make the white man give him a couple states so he can have a Negro colony within the white country. But he don't want to leave the white country, though. Okay? He wants to stay here. And he'd rather spend the rest of his life fighting white people to accept him or fighting white people to give him a pseudo-nation within a nation, because there's no such thing as a physical nation within another nation. That's nonsense. Okay, so you got a lot of brothers who claim they hate the white man, but they don't want to leave him. I want to be very clear about that. They claim they hate the white man, but they don't want to leave him. They're going to spend the rest of their life fighting with him over his laws and his government, in his statutes, okay, instead of going to hell home and making Africa what it needs to be. We in love with white people, Ms. Blue. Like, we don't want to admit it, but our central issue as it relates to repatriation to Africa is that black people suffer from battered spouse syndrome. We've been beat up by white people so strong that we think we need them in order to exist. Just like a woman who's been beat by her husband or beat by her boyfriend. Once they beat you down so much, it begins to affect your self-esteem, your self-confidence, and your motivation to change your life. That's where we are right now. We've been beat down for almost 200 years, told we're nothing, and although we are free to go, we don't want to go because we are in love with our oppressor. I said we are in love with our oppressor.
Mm-hmm. All right, you guys. 646-652-2711. Brother Umar Johnson joining us here live in the remix. We're going to go. I believe we have an international caller that is calling in from area code or international country code 4420. You are live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hello, Miss Blue.
Yes, greetings, greetings.
Yeah, this is Olu, and I'm calling in from the UK.
Yes, greetings to you.
Yeah, how are you? Just a couple of questions to your guest. I'm from Nigeria originally.
Yes, can you speak up for us just a little bit? We're having a little bit of problems hearing you here.
Okay. Well, what I'm saying is a couple of questions to your guest, right? And I'm Nigerian, and I heard him speak, you know, when he said he was on a plane, and he said there were 75 Koreans and 75 Chinese investors going to Nigeria to invest, right? I think... you know, is it possible he galvanized a lot of the rich people in America as well to come and invest in Nigeria? Because he's definitely right that Nigeria has good potential investment, but we have a lot of people who are not our color there, right? So we need, unfortunately... a lot of brothers and sisters back in America didn't quickly recognize the potential in Nigeria. You know, had it been they had, then they probably would have. So I'm wondering whether he can also galvanize the rich, because I know African Americans are very well, more established brothers and sisters in America than compared to, you know, the African, the black continent, which is called Africa. And then again, he said something about, you know, mixed race. I do support the fact that, yes, you know, blacks, most especially with the situation we're in, we shouldn't be, you know, mixing, you know, with the oppressors at the moment, because just like he said, a biracial child definitely has conflict of interest, and that's the truth. And I should not always see them in, you know, a leading role. Like if they come and they want to start leading black people, there'll always be that conflict of interest, you know. So, I mean, that's the question I'm asking. I don't know whether he understands, you know.
Oh, I'm quite sure he's right here with us. Brother Umar can hear you. Yes.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. First, I want to say greetings to my Nigerian brother. Nigeria happens to be my favorite place. Happens to be my favorite place on the continent. Of course, I've only been to 5 countries, but I absolutely love Nigeria, and I spend a lot of time in Enugu State when I am there. In fact, when I do repatriate, you know, I would love to repatriate to Nigeria. Nigeria is getting a lot of bad news, bad press in America. And that's being done deliberately. And the reason it's being done deliberately is because Nigeria has a lot of natural resources, for one. Number two, Nigerians are a very self-respecting and a proud people. They're very assertive and aggressive, which is exactly what we need in order for us to take Africa to where it needs to be. You can always tell a Nigerian brother or sister because, you know, they stand up for what they believe in. They're going to tell you to your face how they feel. They're definitely the type of Pan-Africanist that we need. And they're also very, very deep thinkers, very intellectual. Not to say that other Africans are not, but Nigerians definitely have a flair and a pride to them that makes them stand out. And when you look at the numerical numbers in Nigeria, it's the most populous nation on the continent. I think strategically, that would be a place for African Americans to begin to come back, give back, collaborate with, and build, because there is a strong Pan-Africanist spirit in Nigeria coming from the Nnamdi Azikiwe, who was a Pan-Africanist and a Garveyite, went to school here in Lincoln University. And in addition to that, the reason why America is doing so much to make black people not trust Nigerians, calling them scammers and get-over artists, not to say that that problem isn't there, but that problem is everywhere, including here in the United States. And the only reason why Nigeria is getting stamped with being the scam artist nation is because America definitely doesn't want black people collaborating with Nigerians. And also, there's so many Nigerians in Nigeria that naturally they may have a little bit more problems, but it's only because they got a lot more people. So I just wanted to say that I think Nigeria is definitely a strategic beginning ground for us as we do repatriate, but we're going to have to do a lot to uncondition the minds of black people here who have been led to believe that to go to Nigeria is to face getting ripped off, scammed, cheated, robbed. There's a lot of negative publicity being thrown at the black community about Nigeria, and, you know, and it's being done deliberately. But to answer the brother's question as it relates to rich black philanthropists, I think that we may have some trouble getting them to buy into what we're trying to do, because in America, most rich black people are afraid of white people, because many of them got rich entertaining white people. And because of that, they don't want to destroy that relationship. So it may be difficult to get many of them to give a lot of money in the open. However, I can see some of them, you know, making some contributions in a very private way. But I think that the everyday black man and woman in America has enough disposable money where we could take care of this issue ourselves. I mean, when you look at the Marcus Garvey movement, Marcus Garvey didn't get no big handouts from rich black people. It was everyday black people who purchased those Black Star Line steamships. It was everyday black people who paid for the construction material that they sent to Liberia. So we don't. We're going to try to get money from them, but I think if we don't get it, we'll still be fine on our own.
Yeah. And there's one other thing I want to say is I know you're a very enlightened person. If we have more people like you who can go back to Nigeria or other African nations, and I hope our financial system should be completely different to what they have in America. For instance, in America they have the Federal Reserve there who controls, you know, all the money in the whole world, which is, you know, is in private hands, whereas, you know, in Nigeria now we have what we call CBS, Central Bank, the government central bank, which prints money. But I think in America it's different. You know, it's a private individual that prints money. Am I right?
Yes, you are.
Yeah. So if they need to educate them back home, because we're very docile back home, and I did take your statement when you said we're self-hating. It's not only brothers and sisters in America. We are more self-hating back home as well. You know, very, very self-hating and very docile. You know, and we believe is the white man that should always, most especially the older generations. I noticed you called Nnamdi Azikiwe as well. These are people, yes, you know, they are pan-Africanist, as they so-called, you know, themselves. But they worship the white people. They worship their ways, most especially the older generations. You know, the older generations of Africans actually destroyed a lot of things because they didn't have the guts to stand up to, you know, a white man, right? The most important thing is they need to be re-educated so that the we don't have something like a Federal Reserve where we have it in private hands and they will start manipulating everybody and creating false inflation in the country, thereby trying to, well, I noticed that's a Western thing because they have this idea they want to depopulate the whole world. So then they will create anarchy amongst people so that they can bring in martial law and, you know, or whatnot. But we Africans over there need to be educated that it's only the government that has the power to print the money, and things like that should be illegal to go in private hands, right? You know, private hands. And then the other thing is teaching off military. You know, I once served in the U.S. Army as well. I'm not proud of that, but, you know, I was just, you know, adventurous, you know. And as the lady said, you know, she taught from a military, just like you said, it's only power. We can't sit down in another person's country and begin to ask for help or rights, most especially from the oppressor. You know, and I hope you can say the same thing to some of the people who fight here, some of the black brothers and sisters who fight here, as if this is their country. And what they try to do is they want to fight, you know, for their rights here, you know, but it's the wrong platform to fight in, you know. And just like you said, you can't have blacks face white here. I mean, they'll stamp us out, you know, easy. So we need to be taught, you know, military, strategic military approach, you understand, because power is, as you said, and I believe that statement you made, is it's all about power. Right, so if we Africans think we're going to sit down and constantly continue to coerce the white man to do our bidding, it's never going to happen, just like you said. You understand? And the main thing is educating Africans, because we are just completely so docile, you know, very, very docile. And I can understand why Africans, brothers and sisters in America, are not coming home. I mean, if we don't have our things together there, we our government stinks. You know, they can't run a simple administration. Even the local authorities completely stinks. Some of us are hanging here. We're afraid to go back home because of the way the system is over there, right? So I can understand the brothers and sisters back. I'm sure a lot of them want to come back home, but you know, the system is not functioning there. So how are they going to survive? So, you know, it's human nature, you know. But with people like you, I think we need, you know, since you say you go to Nigeria, you can help educate a lot of our government. And they need it. They want you to come in and educate them and tell them these are the things. But some of them are not really aware when the white man comes and he's offering them things. This is what, you know, with conditions, they're not really aware of it before they start signing on whatever agreement with the white man. So we need people like you to come and educate us more over there, you know. So I hope I've not lost you, you know. Hello?
No, not at all, not at all. Totally agree. Also, my brother, make sure if you're on Facebook, make sure you request me. If you have email, send me an email message. Because there's another brother in the UK, you may know him, Brother Chidozie. We call him Biggie. He's from Nigeria. He's a Pan-Africanist, a Garveyite. He's studying in the UK. And in fact, I'm supposed to be contacting him tonight because I'm going to be coming to the UK to do a series of lectures on Pan-Africanism to see if I can begin to build that network between blacks in America and blacks in the UK and then blacks on the continent. So if you're in the UK, there's an opportunity that we'll be able to meet face to face within the next couple months. So please make sure you get in contact with me. So I would very much like you to be a part of that meeting when I do come to the UK.
I'll attempt to. And one more last thing, we shouldn't be afraid of anyone. I don't fear anybody. You know, I mean, one man dies only once, right? And I think a lot of us brothers and sisters, we do things to, you know, for instance, one of the people who were calling me was saying, oh, if we go, the white man is still going to be actually careless. You know, if the main thing is we need a lot of connection over there, right, then you see the traditional might Africans to have, you understand, because it's not only America that has the warfare. Right, Africa too has their warfare in a traditional sense, and trust me, it's there. It's there. That's all I have to say. Thanks, Mrs. Blue, for giving me the chance to speak to your guest.
Yes, Yes, and thank you so much for calling in and sharing that with us as well. So peace and love to you as well. All right, we're going to continue on, you guys. We're still live here in the remix. Excellent questions, lots of discussion, chat room full, phone lines full with you guys calling in with questions for Brother Umar Johnson and getting lots of discussion and movement going as well. We're going to go to the caller calling in from area code 407. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 407. Okay, we'll go to the next caller. We're going to go to the next caller calling in from area code 321. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Yes, my name is Okumu Kubwael. Not from Morristown Temple, but just from my family history and all. But basically, one of the things that I think is one of the things that I think we're doing is we're giving this so-called white man too much credit in terms of his power. You know what I'm saying? Because he's not as powerful as we want him to be, because
you're still here. We're listening to you. I just wanted you to kind of elaborate a little bit more when you say we're giving the white man a little too much power. Explain a little bit about what do you mean by giving too much power.
Even Brother Bobby Hemmett one day was they were doing an interview with him. He said something that was really powerful. He said, "My queen told me to stop saying, to reference to them as the power that be. Because you have to understand, like a brother by the name of Asir the Duke of Tears was explaining, is that his power is basically us believing that he has power."
Right, but tonight, here's what we're talking about, I don't know if you caught the beginning of the show, so I definitely can appreciate that, and yes, we definitely love Brother Bobby Hemmett as well, and tonight, we're talking about from a political standpoint, so we're dealing with these things, and yes, we did cover the sociological part of it, the psychology part of it, we've been talking about all of that, but we are talking from a political standpoint here, and so these are the elements that we're bringing into the discussion tonight with Brother Umar. Did you have a question that you wanted to pose to the forum? I know you said that you feel that we're giving the white person or the white man too much power. But in fact, you know, we did kind of cover that. I know Brother Umar will speak to that in a minute. But I wanted to know what is the true question or what is your comment that you want to make here?
That was basically my comment. That was basically it, because politically, we just basically need to work on our spirituality, because I just wanted to comment because what we see around us is not really what we should be aiming for.
Right. And again, like you just said, we are not talking from a spiritual point of view. Of course, that's going to play a part in the components, and everything does. But when we're taking a look at this discussion, we're not talking about it from a spiritual point of view. And not to tell you that that's not a point of view to look at, because that's a point of view that I come from myself. But tonight, our guest tonight is discussing this from a political point of view. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yes. So
yeah,
we definitely, that is a component that does come into play and should come into play for each and every single one of us. But tonight we're taking a look at a different piece of the pie, if you can look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, I can definitely look at it from that perception.
So I thank you so much for calling in and sharing that with us as well, because those are discussions that we have on the remix all the time, as well as this discussion. I think if we're going to really, really begin to evolve ourselves or really get into moving ourselves into that place, we have to really be open to understanding that we are multidimensional people and we are multi-level people. And so we need to be able to look at things not just from one angle, but really from a 360, and really be able to cultivate all of those things into play, because they are important. Tonight we are talking about from a political position. So thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Peace and love. All right, we're going to continue here live in the remix. I think this is a great time for us to really, really be able to connect with Brother Umar Johnson. I would like for you to give out that information again. Some people are asking for the email address. And also for those of you who are thinking about really taking sort of that step, maybe you have a business idea, maybe you yourself, some of you in the chat room are saying and sending me notes that you have thought about maybe moving to the continent of Africa and you want to find out more, you want to have that one-on-one discussion or find out what you need to do or some things you can begin to do to get yourself in the best position to make the best choice. If that is going to be a decision for you to make, you can contact Brother Umar Johnson. So I'm going to allow him to go ahead and give that out as well.
Yes, indeed. And also I wanted to say to everybody that you need to open up a Pan-African bank account. What I mean by that is you need to open up a bank account right here where you are, where you deposit money in it so it can accumulate. So when you do finally repatriate or travel, that money will be there for you. Traveling-wise, as I said, when I go to Africa, all I have to worry about is my plane ticket. If you travel with me, all you would have to worry about is your plane ticket, unless you're allergic to black people and have to be in the hotel. We stay with the family.
Right.
But you should have at least $2,500. That's enough for your round-trip ticket. If we go to hotel route, you want to have at least $3,500 to include the food and the lodging. So your Pan-African bank account, of course, the more money, the better. But we want to get to at least $4,000 because you never know what the flight fee is going to be. It fluctuates with the gas price. One time I went to Africa, I paid $1,600 for a round trip. Next time I went to Africa, it was $2,500. It jumped up almost $1,000. So $4,000 is good to work with. I'm pretty sure you won't be spending it all, but it's always better to have more than less. So please, tomorrow, go take $100, $50, $25, and you set you aside a Pan-African bank account. And the only time you touch that money is whether you're going to be donating to a cause in Africa, traveling to Africa for use while you're in Africa. And I need to do the same thing myself to make sure I have enough money to travel when the time comes. So please, a Pan-African bank account.
I'm sorry. I just kind of wanted to know this because a couple of people are asking this question. Do you have a particular bank? I know in Chicago, North Carolina particularly, there is a bank that is black-owned and operated and has been. Is there a particular bank that you would recommend or institution or where to put this at?
Most of the black banks, and if you go online and go to, I believe, in COBRA, National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations, or if you just do a Google search for black banks, most of them are regional. They're not national. Like, they're not, like, Citizens Bank might be everywhere, but the black banks tend to be regional. So we have a couple black banks in Philadelphia. Wherever you are, you want to study, you know, you want to investigate the black banks. I'm sure there's at least a couple of black savings and loans around. You can definitely do that. But I do want to say this. With that Pan-African bank account, because you're going to be tapping that while you're in Africa, make sure if you open up an account at a black bank, and I do like that idea and I encourage it, make sure the black bank allows you to withdraw funds from your account in Africa. Remember, a lot of banks are not intercontinental, which means that you cannot draw from an ATM in Africa. Like in America, if you go to any ATM, you can pull money. It's not like that when you go internationally. Some banks, you cannot withdraw funds from the ATM in certain countries. So please make sure you will be able to access your money, because I would hate for anybody to go to Africa, go to an ATM, and can't pull money out of that particular black bank because they're not intercontinental. So please make sure you can access the money from an ATM in Africa.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, and you're going
to give... Ms. Lou, I wanted to say, sorry for cutting you off. I wanted to say thank you for having the show because this is the first show. You know, I'm on the shows all the time and I'm always speaking. And this is the first show that I've ever been on, that was totally dedicated to Pan-Africanism and repatriation. It's the first one ever for me, ever. And I just want to thank you for that. And I want to dedicate tonight's show, if I may, in the honor of those who were born or who died on August the 21st. I want to dedicate it to Nat Turner, whose revolution took place on August the 21st. I want to dedicate it to George Jackson, whose martyrdom took place on August the 21st. I want to dedicate it to Tisatla Overjoy and Jean Jacques Dessalines, Bookman Dada, and all the brothers and sisters who fought and died in the Haitian Revolution, which begins at midnight tonight. But August the 21st was the last day of planning for that. I want to dedicate it to all my enslaved African ancestors, the first of which were delivered to Jamestown, Virginia, on August the 20th of 1619, for this would have been the first full day of slavery for our ancestors in this country, and also to the black Jesus Christ of Ethiopia. For those who don't know, there's certain Christian groups who hold that Jesus the Christ was a Leo and was born on August the 21st.
Yes, yes, beautiful, beautiful. Yes, wonderful. And don't forget, and thank you so much. It's always an honor to have you come and share. You bring so much information, and that's what it's about. That's what the Remix platform is about. And so tonight we are definitely dedicated to being open and listening and receiving this message that you have, not just for us, but those who may be listening in the future as well. So it's an honor to have you come on, and you're always welcome. So definitely give out your information again. Everyone is saying, please get that again. Please get that again.
Very much so. Very much so. And I wasn't making that announcement to wrap it up, Ms. Blue, unless you had some other things. I'll definitely be with you until the key is.
Okay, yes.
Okay, yes. The contact information again, area code 215-989-9858. Again, area code 215-989-9858. I'm on Facebook. If you Facebook me, for those who are on Facebook, you'll definitely be able to get my phone number and email off of that in case it doesn't come across clearly today. Also, Umar Abdullah Johnson at yahoo.com, U as in unity, M as in mankind, A as in Africa, R as in redemption, A as in Africa, B as in blackness, D as in destiny, U as in unity, L as in legacy, L as in loyalty, A as in Africa, H as in hope, Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, Umar Abdullah Johnson at yahoo.com.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. 646-652-2711 is the number to call. We still have about 29 minutes left to go in the forum here. So if you guys have more questions, certainly call in, press 1, and so we can continue the discussion here with Brother Umar Johnson as well. And so right now, it doesn't look like anyone is new on the board that I can see that has their hand up for a question. So I definitely want you to just continue to share with us. It's a lot of great information.
Very much so. A couple misconceptions about Pan-Africanism, Ms. Blue, and that is, first and foremost, people need to understand that for our first 200 years in slavery, from 1619 to 1819, almost up until the Civil War, actually for our first 250 years of slavery, Ms. Blue, we were all Pan-African. The dominant political ideology in the enslaved African community was Pan-Africanism. We are taught that the ideology of integrationism and the ideology of trying to claim America is something that we generally believed in. That is not true. When you study the thought of black people in America, we identify with our continent. We could not wait to get home. That's why when you look at the names of early black churches and when you look at the names of early black schools, all of them have the name Africa in it. Africa Free School, First African Church this, First African Church that. We never gave up our identity and connection to Africa. That was something that took place after the Civil War when black people thought that they could have a future in America. Our first 250 years of slavery, okay, our first 250 years of slavery, we were all Pan-African. Frederick Douglass was actually a minority amongst those who believed that we had a future in America. Most blacks believed that it was best to go back home. If you remember the Amistad trial, the brothers in the Amistad, they fought to go back home, and they weren't the only ones. There were other Africans who fought to go back home. So I want to dispel the notion that once we got here, everybody thought it was best to stay here. That is not true. Martin Delaney was a great Pan-Africanist. He was an inventor. He was an early Mason. He published the North Star with Frederick Douglass. He was the first black uniform officer in the Civil War. He was the first black man to be nominated for vice president of the United States of America. No one talks about this. Reverend Henry Highland Garnett, first black minister to give a lecture in front of the United States Congress. Henry Highland Garnett escaped to freedom from slavery. He was one county over from Frederick Douglass. I believe he was from Troy County, and Frederick Douglass was from Talbot County, Maryland. Henry Highland Garnett went to the African Free School. He was a good friend with another Pan-African nationalist, Alexander Crummell, who built the first institute of higher learning for black people in this country, the American Negro Academy in 1897 for blacks. He went to Africa and gave 20 years of his life to the upbuilding of Africa. Henry Highland Garnett was an abolitionist. He fought to enlist black men in the Civil War. His last wish before he died was to go to Africa and die there. And then he finally had a chance to go to Africa, and his dream came true. Martin Delaney went to Africa. He actually signed a treaty with kings in Nigeria who were willing to give land for us to repatriate back home. Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, who actually built a school that Elijah Muhammad attended as a child. He was the first black man to say that God was black. He was one of the first black legislatures after the Civil War during Reconstruction. He's the first black man to say that God was a black man. He's the black man who said that the red, white, and blue flag of America was a dirty, stinking rag. We also have John Brown Rushworth. John Brown Rushworth was the first black man to get a degree in America. John Brown Rushworth was not only the first black man to get a college degree in America, he was also the first black man to publish a newspaper. Freedom Journal was published by John Brown Rushworth and Samuel Cornish. Why am I saying all this? Because we've been led to believe that Pan-Africanism started with Marcus Garvey. We've been led to believe that Pan-Africanism is a minority ideology. Most of the major thinkers, most of the major black thinkers of the 16th century, 17th century, 18th century were all Pan-Africanists. Pan-Africanism went underground at the end of the Civil War until Marcus Garvey's arrival in 1920. So we had about 60 years of integration, and then Marcus Garvey gave us Pan-Africanism again. And then it went underground again when Marcus Garvey died in 1940, and we didn't see it again until 25 years later in the person of Malcolm X. After Malcolm split from the Nation of Islam, he returned to the Garveyism, the Pan-Africanism, of his mother and father, who were both members of the Marcus Garvey movement. Malcolm X started the Organization for Afro-American Unity. He started that because he wanted to tie black people into the Organization of African Unity so we would have a seat at the table of Pan-African parliamentary procedure and operation. And so Malcolm X was the first great significant Pan-Africanist after Marcus Garvey. So as you see, we've had Pan-Africanism all throughout our history, but it keeps getting pushed out by elitist black people who keep telling blacks that the best thing they could do is try to integrate into America. We'll never be integrated into America. We were brought here to serve, and the only thing you'll be allowed to do as long as you stay here is serve white people.
All right, everyone. We're going to continue this discussion here. Still see callers on the board, Brother Umar Johnson. You guys know how to reach him. Definitely you can connect on Facebook by just Googling the name, Brother Umar Johnson, of course. And then also you can reach out to him to call by calling area code 215-989-9858. We're going to continue. Press 1 if you're on the phone line and you have a question. We're going to go to the caller calling in, it looks like, from area code 347. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Peace. Good night, everyone. My name is Imani. I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Okay. Peace. Greetings.
I just first want to say happy birthday to Umar.
Thank you so much, Queen. Thank you so much. I appreciate you so much.
Sure. And Ms. Blue, I just really want to thank you for having this this discussion tonight. I haven't, I go on, I listen to a lot of Blog Talk Radio.
Right.
I listen to a lot of Blog Talk Radio and, Africans that are African-centered or that are, metaphysical or what have you. But I've yet to listen to one that's really geared toward Pan-Africanism. So I just really want to thank you for having this conversation tonight. I'm ready, because I definitely agree with Brother Umar. It's like, yeah. Why continue to fight, Our people have been fighting here, for years upon years. You know what I mean? And it's just like, why? For what? When we can go there. And I also agree that, and I've heard someone else say that, as long as Africa is suffering, Africans all over the world will be suffering. So why not go back there and build, and improve it? So
right.
I'm ready.
Okay, well, that's good. So you definitely are going to be one of the sisters that's on board to begin to go over there. I think that's going to be good. A lot of sisters have PM'd me tonight or emailed me tonight and said that they, too, was thinking about. It's something I've entertained at one point in my life as well, too. I think it's something we need to take a very, very close look at. And, yes, and I'm glad that you were able to come to the platform tonight and really see. We cover a lot of things here on The Remix. I will definitely tell you that. I don't know how often you listen, from everything from children to poets in prison to everything as far in the woo-woo as you can go. But I definitely agree with Brother Johnson and many others that say we are multidimensional people and we cannot dismiss one part of ourselves and think that that's the only place that we can begin to build. And if we are going to be able to get ourselves into that place where we can begin to make good choices, because we can look around, especially those of us who are living right here, we can say in the West, in this particular area, it's not a lot of good options here to make good choices from. And so this becomes a place for you to begin to look. I am a firm believer that first you must seek to understand before you seek to be understood. And so this is a great way to come in, and who better to do it than with Brother Umar. Yes, so beautiful. Mm-hmm.
One other thing, Ms. Blue, I wanted to say. I want to make sure people understand that I'm not trying to paint a rosy utopian picture of Africa. I'm not trying to do that at all.
Right.
I do want to dispel the myth that there's violence everywhere in Africa.
Yeah,
violence
that's
is only in a few places. It's only in a few places. Africa is largely peaceful. It tends not to get unpeaceful until people get their rights impeded upon by the government. But Africa is an extremely peaceful place to be, way more peaceful than here. And this is coming from someone who goes.
Right.
Here's the issue. We have problems in America. We're going to have problems in Africa. So we
right.
say, why leave one set of problems and go to the other? Because in Africa, you can solve them. In America, you will never be allowed to solve your problems because the government is creating your problems. It is the government itself that is creating the problems of black people. So as long as we stay here, okay, those problems will always exist. So the reason we're giving up America's problems for Africa's problems is because we'd rather fix our own home than somebody else's, because we know they can be fixed over there. Africa welcomes your help. Africa welcomes your help. The United States government is creating your catastrophes over here. And as long as you're here, they're going to continue to do it because they do not want us. the number one social issue in America, the number one political issue in America, the number one economic issue in America, is what are we going to do with these 40 million Negroes who we do not want? The end of slavery was never supposed to happen. We were never supposed to be free. But after Abraham Lincoln was forced to allow us to be in the Civil War so we could win it for him, he had no choice but to free us because we may have went to war against him. So you would have had black Union soldiers fighting against white Union soldiers, and we may have won that war, and America might be a black country right now. So we was only freed because they were between a rock and a hard place. We had beat the Confederacy, and if they told us to go back into slavery, then guess what? We may have turned and kicked their asses also, okay? So it was something that they had to do, not that they wanted to do. So, again, we're going to Africa because we can solve those problems. They welcome our help. The United States government is the reason you have problems in this country.
All right, all right. Well, we're going to continue on. Thank you so much to the sister who called in as well, too. And we're going to continue. We're going to continue with the callers calling in. Calling in, it looks like, from area code 313. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hello. My name is Diane Hodges. I'm calling from Jacksonville, Florida. And I'd like to thank you, Miss Blue. I listen to you often, but thank you so much for this platform tonight. And also thank you, Brother Umar Abdullah Johnson, for this discourse, which is so, so terribly needed. I have one question, and that is, I love my Moorish brothers and sisters, but is it possible that a few of them, a few of the leaders, have purposefully distracted the people from connecting with Africa by insinuating that this is our land and this is where we should be?
Here's the Moorish argument, and I respect it, and I do understand it. Their argument is that African people are indigenous to the entire planet. We were the first people to civilize each of the six continents, because Europe is not a continent, it's Western Asia. They're correct in saying that we were the first. So their idea is that we can possess ourselves of any part of this country. And so they argue, why should we leave America if we were here before the white man got here? That's the argument. And my answer to that is real simple. You are a population of 40 million amongst a European population of 350 million.
Yes.
There is no way, in terms of numerical, political, or economic strength, you will ever achieve equality here with this European, whether you know his laws or don't. I take issue with my Moorish brothers philosophically because they believe that salvation is in learning the law, just like a Christian believes salvation is in accepting Jesus, or the Muslim believes that salvation is in taking your Shahada. There's no salvation in law. There's no salvation in political salvation in Jesus or Muhammad. Salvation comes from rolling up your sleeves and working with your brothers and sisters and creating the future that we need to have. So my issue with them is that they are distracting brothers and sisters to the extent that they have in them thinking that just by mastering the laws of America and giving up their African identity and accepting a Moorish identity, that they're somehow going to change their status, that it's going to somehow change their treatment, that it's somehow going to give them some degree of power that they didn't previously have. It's because they don't understand power. Power controls the legal system. Power doesn't follow the legal system. Powerful men could give a damn about laws. Do you think the Rockefellers care about antitrust laws? They break them every day. Why do they not care about the law? Because when you have power, you supersede the law. So my argument to the Moorish brothers and sisters is you can teach everybody American law. You can make them experts of all the treaties that's been signed between America and Morocco and everybody else. But at the end of the day, the white man is in charge, and he does not give a damn about law when it comes to white supremacy. Look at all the treaties the white man ignored with the Native American. Look at all the treaties the white man ignored with Africans on the continent. Since when did he respect law and order? He doesn't. So, my argument to the Moorish brothers and sisters is I think they're selling our people a false hope in the law. This thing ain't about law. And in terms of common sense, does it make any sense to want to possess yourself of America that doesn't even have 10% of the mineral wealth of Africa? Does it make any practical sense to want to fight for this when you have something that's so much greater? Does it make any practical sense to want to struggle as a group of 40 million against a population of 350 million where you can go and be amongst a billion of Africans of your own kith and kin on the richest piece of land on the face of the earth, even if ideologically you believe you have a right to possess yourself of America because we were the first people here? Practically and politically, does it make sense to fight the white man when you don't have the numbers to beat him? Or does it make better sense to go to hell back home where you have the numbers and the resources to beat them? So respectfully, I disagree with the Moors philosophically, and I disagree with them practically. I do understand the basis of their argument. It makes sense, and it's legitimate, but it's not practical. It's not practical at all. Knowing the law in and of itself ain't going to save you. And just because we were the first people here, that does not mean we should stay and fight, because wherever we are on the face of the earth, we got our start in Africa. So if you come from Africa, why are you giving up your native birthright and exchanging it for an American birthright? I believe, and I've said this to my Moorish friends, and I got a lot of buddies who are Moors, and we debate, everything's in respect, because Marcus Garvey, who was a Pan-Africanist, and Noble Drew Ali, who was a Moor, they did have a working relationship with each other, so I also maintain a working relationship with the Moors. But at the end of the day, any black person, including the Moors, who wants to stay in America and fight this white man for the right to be here is in love with the white man. And as far as I'm concerned, they can stay the hell here.
All right.
Thank you, brother, and happy birthday.
Thank you so much, Queen.
All right. Beautiful. We're going to continue. We have about 9 minutes left to go in the forum, and we do have some more callers on the line. We definitely will get a little time afterwards. We're not going to stay too long because we know it is your Earth Day today, Brother Umar, as well. So what I want to do is just take this time. I want to give you sort of the opportunity to really just kind of, for those that are listening all over the world, to kind of close us out a little bit here as well as we continue to maybe catch the few callers that are still here, and the rest can always go back and download the show to hear that.
Indeed. I missed your last statement, Ms. Blue. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I said if you can just close us out, and then everyone else that is not on the phone line to get the last couple of callers here, they can download the show to hear that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just want to say to everyone that I want you to definitely begin to start studying Pan-Africanism, study the history of it. If you need a list of books to read, please email me. You can chat with me on Facebook. You can post on my wall on Facebook. You can send me messages on Facebook. I do check them. But correspondence, I prefer email. I don't find Facebook correspondence to be particularly convenient. So if you are expecting me to respond to something, please email me. If you're just letting me know something or you're dropping by to say hi, Facebook is fine. But if it's going to be a correspondence, I prefer that it be on my email account, umarabdullahjohnson@yahoo.com. But again, if you need a book list of some books that you need to read on Pan-Africanism, I can certainly supply them to you. There's a lot of good books that have been coming out recently on the true history of Pan-Africanism, showing how black people have been going back home for centuries, that repatriation is nothing new. And I want everybody to familiarize themselves with that word. We are repatriationists. Okay, there's some people who claim to be Pan-Africanists, but they don't deal with Africa. Okay, they just have a connection to Africa culturally or intellectually. We're not dealing with that nonsense. We're dealing with a practical relationship with the continent. That's called repatriation, and that's something that you don't hear a lot about. And the reason you don't is because when Marcus Garvey was deported from America, this is important to understand in terms of Pan-African history. When Marcus Garvey was deported from America in 1927, every organization that came to prominence after him
wanted nothing to do with Africa. It's very important that we understand this. Mm-hmm. The Nation of Islam, much respect to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but he did not identify with Africa. In Nation of Islam theology, they are Asiatic black men. They claim that they don't even come from Africa. You know, and I respect the doctrine, you know, so I'm not here to debate it, but I just want you to see why we lost our Pan-Africanism up until Malcolm's defection from the nation. So the Nation of Islam got away from Pan-Africanism. The Moorish science temples, they never dealt with Africa either except North Africa, Morocco, okay? So there was no serious Pan-Africanist thrust with them because, again, they want to repossess America instead of repossessing themselves of the richest piece of real estate on the face of the earth. Father Divine, he came with Christianity. Daddy Grace, he came with Christianity, and they didn't have a Pan-African program either. So it's important from a historical timeline perspective of Pan-Africanism to understand the reason we lost Pan-Africanism wasn't because it wasn't effective. It was very effective. Remember, Marcus Garvey organized the largest black mass movement in world history, 15 million people. So if we didn't want to go back to Africa, why were 15 million people working with Marcus Garvey? More than the Nation of Islam, more than the Black Panther Party, more than the Black Liberation Army, more than the Moore Science Temples, more than the NAACP and Urban League put together. Okay, so clearly we always had a Pan-African focus. Okay, so we have to go on back to that Pan-African focus. But again, it was dropped. The ball was dropped in 1927 when Garvey was deported. It was really dropped when he died in 1940. It was picked back up with Malcolm, but of course he was assassinated right after he began to work with the African state. So we have to pick it back up again. Minister Farrakhan, he's not interested in the Pan-African program. Okay, Al Sharpton, he's not interested in the Pan-African program. Time Joyner, Cornel West, Tavis Smiley, those guys love white people. They want to stay here and, you know, try to get along better with Europeans. We want to go the hell home. So please study your Pan-Africanism. Look it up on the Internet. There's YouTube clips. But, of course, you need to read the books because the books are more reliable because they're done by people who do research. So please email them. Email me for that. And if you're interested in being a part of those meetings, if you're interested in attending the first conference on serious Pan-African repatriation, please email me. In the subject line of the message, please put repatriation to Africa so I'll know what you're emailing me for because I get a lot of emails and I want to make sure I don't lose you. But we're going to begin to meet. We're going to meet with the embassies, and we're going to visit Africa, open that Pan-African bank account, and save up that $4,000.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much for that. 4 minutes left to go in the forum. I want to thank everyone for the share tonight. We're going to continue just for a little bit this discussion here. Don't forget to download 646-652-2711 is the number to call. You need to get in before the 4 minutes is up and so you can hear the end of the show. If you don't hear, if you don't get to hear all of the show, no worries. You can always download, but definitely download. Really give it some thought. Give it some good thought as we've done tonight so we can continue to learn and grow and do that in many different ways as well. So we're going to keep going. We're going to go to the next caller calling in from area code 816. You're live with the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Yeah, greetings, Ms. Lou, and greetings, Brother Omar. This is John Power. We're calling from Kansas City. And my question is, the comment is, I truly do want to go to Africa. That's been a lifelong goal. And I was wondering, two things. What place for senior citizens? Like, I'm 62 years old, and also I'm living in public housing. I have no income. How can I fit into this plan?
Well, one thing we know about, you know, African culture, and again, it all comes down to studying where you might want to be. For example, if I looked at an elder in your position based on the countries that I have been to, I would probably look to Nigeria. Only because in Nigeria,
Ghana's the country I want to go to.
Okay, Ghana.
I already know that.
Right.
But you know what can you help? What can I do to generate capital? It appears capital is going
to
be.
Well, number one, we would have to look at whether or not there's any type of business that you could have when you're there. Okay, that's one thing. Another thing we could look at is whether any type of Social Security that you may get here in America, you could still continue to get that, and you simply would just withdraw it in Africa. And seeing that the money in Africa goes a lot further than the money here, your Social Security money, which we would normally struggle with if that was our only source of income in America, that would be more than enough for you to live comfortably in Africa, without a doubt.
Right. Well, I'll just say one more thing. I have multiple skills. I'm a very skilled person in electronics, and also a handyman around the house. I could build a house. I'm sure.
Oh, so you're still mobile.
So I'm a skilled laborer. I've worked all my life.
The past 10 years have been hardships.
Yeah, no problem. I've been a foreman. I've managed more than 20 people at one time for over 11 years. I have multiple skills. I'm also in broadcasting. I've done 11 years on radio. So, you know, I want to go to Africa. Got to go.
Well, definitely email.
All right, Miss Blue, I'm done.
Definitely
so
email
much.
Me. You know, but
I have no email.
Okay.
Well, I guess I can go to the Putz Library.
Okay.
Do you have
you can call me.
Yeah.
You can call me
this
and leave me a message
phone,
with your contact
information. Cell phone that I have access to, yeah.
You can call me and leave me a message with your contact information, but it sounds like with you being an elder, I think one of the best ways you can help Africa, instead of, you know, doing that hard labor now at this point in your life, but I think you could teach it to the youth. I think you would be instrumental in teaching your skills to African youth. You know, that could be a business. You would be able to, you know, make some revenue for yourself and at the same time contribute to the building of the infrastructure there. I think you would be fine. But, again,
right.
We're going to make sure you're fine because what we're going to do is start meeting with these embassies, you know, and I don't want to go alone. So people who's interested, please contact me so we could begin to meet because we want them to know that we're serious. If they see one person, they're not going to take us serious. They got to know, you know, that we're connected and there's a group of us. It doesn't have to be a very large group. They have to know that there's a contingency of us who are committed to the same goal. So if anybody's interested in joining me at the meetings that I'm going to have at these African embassies in New York and in Washington, D.C., male or female, okay, it doesn't matter what your religion is. This is Pan-Africanism. You can still have your religion and still be a Pan-Africanist. Please email me.
Okay, yes. I'll do that.
And give out your email one more time for us, Brother Umar.
Sure. My email address is actually there's two emails, but they go to the same inbox. I have umarabdullahjohnson@yahoo.com. UMAR, A as in Africa, B as in Black, D as in Destiny, U as in Unity, L as in Loyalty, A as in Africa, H as in Hope. Umar Abdullah Johnson, Umar is spelled U as in Unity, M as in Man, A as in Africa, R as in Redemption. Umar Abdullah Johnson, no spaces, no hyphens, one word, umarabdullahjohnson@yahoo.com. Also, Umar the Psychologist, whichever you prefer, UMAR, T as in Tall, H as in Hope, E as in Earth, okay, P as in Paul, S as in Strong, Y as in Young, C as in Color, H is in Heaven, O is in Opportunity, L is in Legacy, O is in Opportunity, okay, G as in Great, I as in Independence, S as in Strength, T as in Tall. UmarThePsychologist@yahoo.com or UmarAbdullahJohnson@yahoo.com. They both come to the same inbox.
Yes,
all right,
okay. Then. Beautiful. All right. And thank you for calling in. We're going to probably take one more caller here. And also, I just want to let everybody know, I know we're kind of in the after hours, but if you like the show, I want you to like it on Facebook, download it, because this is something you want to keep and you want to be able to listen to it over and over again. This platform that we have here is free. It's available to us. We don't know. We live in a world that is forever changing. So download is what I say. Hit me up on Facebook. Hit Brother Umar Johnson up on Facebook, share your comments, share your thoughts about the show tonight, and don't forget to get that book list, you guys, of all of those great readings that you can begin to get from Brother Umar Johnson so we can begin to continue to educate ourselves as we respectfully learn. So we're going to go to the next caller who's calling in. It looks like area code 347. You're live in the remix. Please tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
My name is Brother Seville out of New York City, man. I just want to, you know, tell my little brother Umar, you know, happy birthday, you know, and,
we need
this movement, you know what I'm saying, the necessary recourse. You know, I'm under the code, you know what I'm saying, of Marcus Garvey, that's, you know what I'm saying, you know, who has enlightened me, you know what I'm saying, through all these years, you know what I'm saying, and I must make this statement. At the end of the day, we can have any religion we want to have. We can believe anything we want to have, but we have the same okay. We have the same problems. You know what I'm saying? Regardless of what's going on, we have the same issues. And at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying, we must take all these skills and education that we have in America and take it to Africa, man, and build it by nation. You know what I'm saying? I'm tired of all of these great scholars talking this and talking that. We got to come together, put this money together, and go back to Africa and make Africa what it needs to be, because we are the only people, you know what I'm saying, on the face of the earth who have got this education and got this insight, you know what I'm saying, to have the power to go back and uplift Africa, you know what I'm saying, with no question about it. We have to come together and drop these titles and put our resources together and go back to our homeland, you know what I'm saying, and raise it up where it need to be at. You know what I'm saying? Everybody else has a force and power. We have a force and power. We have all the economics there. We have everything we need. All we got to do is get together here and take it back there, and there's no stopping the black African race.
All right.
I totally agree with that.
Thank you for that.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yes. Peace and love to you, brother. Thanks. Okay. All right. So I think that's going to do it for us. An amazing share, as always. You're always welcome to come back. Definitely, I will be in touch as well, too, and see, especially as things progress themselves and things get themselves situated and set up. This will be a great opportunity, like you said, to either whether you decide to go or maybe contribute to being an investor, a researcher, or maybe helping to set up those other connections. I think we all can play a part in this, and a very vital part. So I thank you, and happy Earth Day to you. Sending much love from you, from the Remix family, and everyone here. It was an amazing show, a packed house, so everyone enjoyed the information and is very active in it. And so I think it was done in an excellent way. It couldn't have been better. So I thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. So we're going to go ahead and get ready to close out and, enjoy the rest of the day. I know that this is a part of what you do. It is who you are. And I'm sure that you're also going to enjoy your Earth Day as well, too. So peace and love to you again, Brother Umar.
Thank you, Ms. Blue. Peace and love. And let's do it again sometime.
Yes. Yes, we must. We must. Thank you so much.
All right,
everyone. You too. All right, everyone, we're going to go ahead and close out here. Lots of things to think about, lots of things that we can begin to do to become very, very active in that. I'm going to go ahead and play some song, play a music to take us out of here. Don't forget to reach out to Brother Umar Johnson if you have not done that already as well, and connect yourself. Very powerful brother to be connected with. Thanks to everyone in the Remix family for respectfully learning here tonight. As we do. So we're going to play. Let's see what we can have to sort of kind of close us out here tonight. And yes, I think we'll do a blue glass call maybe a little later tonight. So look out for that. If you like the show, I want you to like it. If you love it, leave me a message on Facebook. Like it and love it on Facebook. And we'll go from there. Let's see. Can't find it. Let's see, you guys. I'm looking for a song that I think will be perfect. If I can't find it, then we'll have to play something else. I don't think I can find it. Well, we're going to take some music to get out of here. Thank you guys for being so patient. Don't forget to download the show. Don't forget to download. Peace and love. And we're going to go ahead and close out. Respect to everyone. Respect to the ancestors. Love to you guys. Wishing you love this week. Have a powerful week. See you guys. See you guys on Facebook. See you on the Know Your Magic line. Hit me up. Question for Blue. You know how to reach me at gmail.com. And I'll see you guys. And much love. Warm spirit.
look no better. Girl, I'm at her feet, and that's a fact, that's a fact. Take a part of me, you know it couldn't feel no better. Take it all with me before you break your back or get a heart attack. Feel no better.